Tonight on The Download, comedian Artie Lang. From Block Club Chicago, Seamus Toomey, Jen Sabella, and Stephanie Lulay. And from the new book, Potty Mouth, author Ann Johnsos. Now, here's your host, a man who likes when he gets his mouth washed out with soap, Justin Kaufman.
With all these new flavors of soap, can you blame me? It's basil. A little lavender. Lemon grapefruit? Yes, please. There's going to be a point that comes where soap is completely edible. Like, and I don't mean like, oh, you can eat soap now. But I mean like FDA saying it is approved, Ronald Reagan ketchup style, right? That's going to be coming up soon. So maybe the mouthwash, getting your mouth washed out with soap won't be such a big deal. Yeah. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Thank you very much for listening on this rainy, cold night as the temperatures, the moments we had in the last 2 days, punctuated by torrential downpours, have gone. The downpours stay. Lots of flooding in the area. Stay with us tonight. We'll keep you up to date. Rob's got it with all the news. Tonight on the show, we've got a great one coming up. Artie Lang joins us, the comedian who, of course, everything from Mad TV to Howard Stern, stand-up, movies, everything in between. He right now is starring on the HBO show Crashing, which is great. We had Pete Holmes on the show last year talking about it. Season 2, I think, has just gotten better and better. I have to say, as a show that takes on a lot of existential issues, there's a lot of religion in it this time around, and this last episode, which was Sunday, was called Artie. Artie's coming on at 9:30, so you've got 2 hours to watch it, right? If you were waiting, if you have a DVR or possibly missed it, you, HBO subscriber, go watch it. It's Artie Lang, the character in the show, dealing with being a heroin junkie. Art imitates life. And obviously, we all know about Artie Lang's issues with drugs, alcohol at certain points, but drugs and heroin. He's actually awaiting sentencing right now for a heroin possession charge in New Jersey. They have a New Jersey about a year ago. So we'll talk with Artie Lang tonight about that episode, what it's like to be so public with a fight for sobriety. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight. Also tonight, the founders of the new Block Club Chicago will be with us. Very excited. How do we cover Chicago? Let's have a conversation at the big table tonight about what's necessary. What do we need when it comes to covering Chicago stories? Is it a reporter on every block? Is it diversity in the newsroom? Is it a better platform? Is it Walter Jacobson? I mean, something in there. Perspective? We'll talk with them. You know, but all three of them were with the now-shuttered DNA Info. They have opened up their own business, a startup in the news industry, and you don't see a lot of it these days. There has been a real move towards digital news, you know, in the last 5-10 years. And even in the last year, you saw a lot of those projects die. So we'll talk to Block Club Chicago about what they see the future of local news. We got a lot to do tonight. I realize we ran late with Ro. So news, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Lynn. And Rob will be all over the flooding stories all night long. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a lot of show tonight. We got a lot. I only got to two of the things. There's 6 or 7 things going on tonight. So I'll get to all that coming up throughout the show. But I wanted to let you know that you're listening to The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and do the carry out. So stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. Well, tonight, the White House seems open to the idea of banning bump stocks. Bump stocks are the thingamajig that can make a semi-automatic weapon automatic. It was made famous by the shooting spree in Las Vegas, although there was no bump stock used in the latest school shooting in Parkland, Florida. So this is the amount of time? It's today, February 20th. When was the Vegas shooting? October 1st? Okay, so I get it. Let me do a little math. 4 months and 20 days. So it takes 4 months and 20 days to start talking about gun control. That's the blueprint. That's the formula, right? So we should get it to the issues of this school shooting, the one in Parkland. We should get to it in the middle of June. Does that sound about right? Can I hold everybody accountable to that? There's always so many push. There's so much pushback when we talk about gun control, and it's not time to talk about that. Well, we now know, right? Bump stock conversation starts now, 4 months and 20 days later. The Me Too movement continues to hit the Madigan machine in Springfield. Yesterday, a lobbyist was accused of being verbally abusive. The media thinks this could be it for Mike Madigan. I'm sorry, does this scandal come with nuclear war? Because my prediction is nothing short of complete annihilation of Earth will remove Mike Madigan from his perch as Speaker of the House. Even then, it'd be a close vote. But it's going to be a slog. With all the enemies in Springfield and the fact that Madigan presides over the boys' club to rule all boys' club, it's going to become a regular daily segment on the news of people coming forward. Wait till they determine that mass reply alls of that sexist joke fits into the Me Too category, right? Last I checked, lots of Democrats working in the water department. When, just think about that, guys. And when Joe from the water department gets the reply all Me Too scandal, we'll see where we're at. The new Rauner ad that goes after Jeannie Ives, his Republican opponent in the primary, suggests she is in the pocket of Mike Madigan. What? Representative Jeannie Ives? From Hinsdale? From Madigan? What? So she said the word Madigan in a Trib editorial meeting, and you created an entire commercial around it saying that she's for him and his policies. I guess that's the new campaign strategy. Just attach everyone to Madigan and hope voters aren't paying attention. Madigan and Jeannie Ives. Jeannie, quote, trans people show up my door, Ives. Like that. Okay, then. I don't like that. I don't like that when that happens. When it's so obvious to everyone that the commercial is lying. And yet, it's played around the clock. And people, and you wonder why people don't like elections. Maybe that's the point. Ooh, a tweet right here. This is nice about U.S. swimming. I love U.S. swimming. It's so great, right? They must be, it must be about how they're gearing up for the summer. No, they're being accused of covering up a number of sexual abuse instances and cases. No! I swear, Olympics. I can kind of understand now why the NHL was like, nah, no thanks. I want to be a part of you guys. That story's going to get huge. Watch out. Trib has a big story today saying the state's wrapped up their case on the illegal towing from Lincoln Towing, the famed Chicago tow truck company. It's painting a clear picture of what happened to my Dodge Colt back in 1995 when I came to the Metro to see Blind Melon. Now I know. And Tiffany and I made such a great connection that night. Spent the rest of it down at the tow lot. In weather, you know the saying, April showers bring May flooding. Flood warnings everywhere tonight. Our rivers are flooding, so some evacuations are underway. Stay with us here at 720 WGN all night. Rob Mertier will have those stories. 50s today, although it's going to do that awesome unnatural thing where it drops like 40 degrees tonight into tomorrow. That awesome thing that just loves to happen 3, 4, 5, 6 times a month. In sports, the Hawks lost to the Kings last night, but they won off the court by giving lifetime bans to 4 fans involved in racially taunting a Washington Capitals player over the weekend. What's the word with those seats, though? They open? It's back in the lottery? What are we doing with them? Good move by the Blackhawks to deal with an otherwise ugly national incident for our city. And what kills me is that there's so many better ways to heckle a player that's in the penalty box, right? I mean, come on. Going for their ethnicity or their color of skin? Come on, you got to get creative. Do some research. Google the player. At least Google the player. The Northwestern Wildcats lost again last night to Maryland. They're out of the tournament contention after blowing a 27-point lead on Saturday at home against Michigan State. Everyone's talking about the stunning way they lost the game, but to me, the question is whether or not the Cats decided to play prevent and milk the clock for the entire second half. Was Michigan State's defense that good, or were the Cats just that bad? Every play, they were pulling the ball back out, being like, calm down, guys. Let's take it down to the end of the clock. It's not great basketball. Anyway, tough loss, and one that pretty much eliminates the Cats from tournament contention sans a Big Ten tournament victory. The Bears are starting to rough up their roster. Linebacker Jarrell Freeman was cut today. Not surprising, although he was a bright spot when healthy and not on performance-enhancing drugs. Hey, make a little room to go after Brian Cushing, right? Cut by the Texans. He'd be good for a couple games till he, too, gets hurt. Still no word on who else will be cut before free agency starts in mid-March. Mike Glennon. Please. Now it's time for a Winter Olympic update. Carpentersville native Brandy Tannell just skated for the short program, in which Johnny Weir said, "What a shocking error." Not good when it comes out of Weir's mouth in the color commentary, but she fell on one of her first turns. But it's early in the early. I guess it's early. I don't even know where we're at in this thing. It's one of those things where every time I watch the Olympics, I'm like, this is for the gold. Oh, it's not for the gold. That's on Thursday. Cool. I guess I'll keep watching. Also, ice dancing. Just ice skating without jumping? Okay. Can I also be the first to say, too many butts. I know that ice skating costumes are awesome, but do they have to be so, I don't know, overtly sexy? Too many butts for the women, too many long Vs for the men. Right? It's cold. Turtlenecks and slacks. It's flu season. Been pretty refreshing to watch the NBA storylines about the remaining part of the season and the All-Star game format and where free agents might go next year without once mentioning or referencing the Bulls. So refreshing to not have our team mentioned at all in any of the fun storylines. Not one. Spring training fully underway now. The Sox first game is Friday right here on WGN Radio. All right. And finally tonight, Carson Ribs in River North. It's closing. The Ribs Joint has been serving Chicagoans and tourists for 41 years. It's making way for a new condo tower on Wells Street. So if you like granite countertops, jacuzzi tubs, and an unlimited supply of wet wipes, this is the place for you. Still going to be $500,000. But that's the carryout for February 20th, 2018. Don't worry, Carson's lovers. We got ribs, too. Well, they're more rib tips than ribs. And by tips, I mean they're not ribs at all. They're chicken, but... All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Josh Hale, who's the CEO of the Big Shoulders Fund here in Chicago. My guest in the Download on Chicago Business, we'll talk about raising funds for Catholic schools in Chicago. That's coming up. And also tonight, Artie Lang joins us. It's the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well.
Yeah? You ready for updates on floods tonight?
We're on flood watch, which means basically the entire Chicago area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hate to inform you.
I know when I had my furnace put in last week on Friday, the guy put it up on cinder blocks and goes, and then he was showing, he's like, just shut this off if it floods in here. And I was just like, you know what? And then I started to get paranoid about flooding. Right. It's like, I looked around, I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't had a problem in this house, but maybe I would.
Well, there's then nothing. I was just going to say, there's nothing like falling asleep to the nice hum of the sump pump all night.
Man. So, yeah. Hopefully that won't happen. But then a lot of people are dealing with it now. So,
good luck to everybody.
Yeah, you're on it. You're on flood watch.
I'm doing my best. Yeah. Right.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, welcome back to the Download here on 720 WGN. And it's time for the Download on Chicago Business, our weekly segment where we feature Chicago area entrepreneurs, small business owners, CEOs, so they can tell their stories so we can better understand ours. Well, just recently, the Archdiocese here in Chicago announced to be closing some schools and cutting back on resources for others. They pointed to dwindling enrollment and the increased costs of education. And for the thousands of Catholics in the area, one of the strongest Catholic areas in the country, life without educational opportunities is one that's just unacceptable, forcing families to make hard choices to relocate and leave their neighborhoods behind. And Chicago, city and neighborhoods, has a strong connection to parochial schools. And research shows that when Catholic schools close, the surrounding neighborhoods see increases in crime and violence and a decrease in social cohesion. Enter the Big Shoulders Fund. A nonprofit is designed to raise private funds to help keep Chicago schools open and thriving. And if not Catholic schools, then give people choices for better educational opportunities in their area. Since 1986, Big Shoulders has raised over $300 million to the cause. And the big question is, with the reasons cited by the Archdiocese, which I mentioned at the beginning here, and also the current situation when it comes to Chicago Public Schools, what can Big Shoulders do to help stem the tide? Joshua Hale, my guest tonight, the president and CEO of the Big Shoulders Fund. Welcome to the Download in Chicago Business. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me, Justin. I appreciate it.
So you've been CEO for a number of years now, but talk about where this idea comes from, Big Shoulders.
Well, you're nice to have us on and to promote this because, you know, education is so critical to our community and to all of us who live here. But just to go back in time, it's amazing. Almost 33 years ago, Big Shoulders Fund was founded.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was inspired by Cardinal Bernardine, who was an incredibly popular leader here in Chicago, but certainly for the Catholic Church. And he went out to business leaders and said, you know, we have these inner city Catholic schools, but I can't afford them. And could you help me to raise funds to ensure they stay open? And you said kind of in your opening the importance of them to community. So open and rooted in community, because neighborhoods need institutions and community-based organizations. Right. These schools are one of them. And the second was to ensure that all children have access, wherever they come from, whatever their background, that this is about serving all children.
And the way to do that is through scholarships and be able to pick up tuition to get them to go to schools like Catholic schools.
That's exactly right. Right. And it's amazing. So all these business leaders jumped on board. Really, the primary one was Jim O'Connor, who remains. He was a founding chairman, and he's a co-chair today with John Canning and Monsignor Velo. But this whole group of business and civic leaders said these schools mean so much. And that was also the time that really school reform started in the public schools, which has led to a lot of great success there as well.
It makes me think about, you'll hear over and over business leaders, even this in last week when the budget address that the governor had here in the state of Illinois, talking about private sector and private business stepping up to be part of it, that school systems, especially when it comes to Catholic schools, they've already gone this route decades ago.
That's exactly right. These schools have been around for 100 plus years, and they've always been, someone said to me that Catholic schools are the original community schools because they are so rooted in community. And 30 years later, our mission hasn't changed much. We really, so to even hear any schools close is always devastating. But, you know, if you look at Chicago and the inner city Catholic schools here, we work with 76 inner city Catholic schools, elementary and high school, about 20,000 kids, 80% minorities, 70% living in poverty, tremendously successful in terms of their matriculation onto high performing high schools and college. And really, we track them all the way into being alumni and coming back to the city as what we think is really as good citizens, that they vote higher than their peers, that they're working, that they're earning. They're the neighbors that you and I want to have in this community.
Right.
And so that means something.
When we talk about giving opportunities for students to get themselves on the right track, as you just mentioned, all the way through. But you are in situations where you have to deal with the financial realities of this current climate, and the Archdiocese is doing that. We just heard that they're going to be closing some schools. At that point, do you start to look at other schools, the idea of high-performing quality public schools or possibly charter schools, to keep people in the areas if the Catholic school, no fault of yours, is no longer there?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so far we haven't. I think the primary is that, you know, one, it's been great to see, you know, such a public enrollment and a number of the efforts the public schools have made to really strengthen those schools. Mm-hmm. That keeps more people rooted in community. I live in the city and I watch how many people aren't running for the suburbs. I moved to Chicago almost 20 years ago and watched really the growth of the charter network from a few to, you know, educating 60,000 statewide. I mean, they've really grown and done, and they've really gotten, you know, some really strong networks. At the same time, I've watched our schools nationally. There's been a large number of inner city Catholic schools closing. We haven't had that. We haven't. Boston, New York, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Cleveland. So many of these places have just cleared out.
Yeah, right.
We have held ours, and I think largely that's because you mentioned we've raised over $300 million for this, that we've been able to work with the Archdiocese as they've had to shift their resources and change the way that they allocate resources within the Archdiocese, and just a shifting of, you know, their mission as a church. We've been able to go and add additional funding. If you look back 10 years ago, we were probably investing $4 to $5 million a year in the schools. Today, we're over $20 million in the schools. So we've been able to ramp up our efforts and really to support that. They don't want to see schools close, and we certainly don't.
Right.
But we had to find a way to address their needs, and they have financial issues which they're addressing, and we're trying to help. But I do think, to your original question, we're not ready to give up in these schools. We have 76, and we've seen enrollment not only stabilize but even grow a little bit in the past couple of years. We've held our schools really strong, and we think that, again, going back to the data, if the data tells us that they help build social cohesion and build neighborhoods, you know, the good news is that our donors, our investors, see that they strengthen neighborhoods, and they've helped us to keep them open. You know, we hope that we can continue to do that.
When you're talking about whether or not you keep a school open or closed, it's one thing to make sure that kids have the opportunity to go to those schools. But I always think about when I think of some of the big suburban public schools and the amenities that they're offering in 2018 and, yeah. and their investments from their communities. And it's not just whether it be from their tax base or from their private sector and private businesses coming forward. But you have to start thinking about it's more than just the baseline.
Yep.
It's more than just keeping the heat on.
Yes.
It's about being able to provide the services that a 2018 school,
yep.
regardless of its affiliation, need to have.
You know, it's a one of the things that we focused on, certainly the last 10 years, is that it's not enough to just stay open, and it's not enough to say, well, we're Catholic, we're good. And we have built in more and more of a data set to look at the growth of our students over time and how to invest. And so there's two areas of investing. One is in the classroom and the teachers and helping them be stronger. So we now invest millions each year in attracting and recruiting teachers out of mm-hmm. college and into the classroom, but also supporting them over time and helping them to bring in better curriculum, manipulatives, technology. So we're investing millions of that each year, not just one year, but each year to really strengthen the classroom. We also invest a lot in the student. We have everything from Saturday school for STEM scholars. We have after-school programming. We have enrichment program that spans after school to weekends. But we even have a camp in Wyoming now where we take kids, 300 each year, out for a week of experience out there. Now, that builds over as they apply in
so that, October. So that's attached to the student.
That's attached to the student?
Yeah.
And so you're investing both in the classroom, mm-hmm. in the strength of the program, and we can show the growth of that over time because we have data that shows as we invest in teachers that students actually do better over time. That makes a lot of sense. And we also invest in the child to give them the enrichment, whether they need a counselor for social-emotional issues or they need a tutor or they need no different than I would do for my own kids. I want my kids to have access to a summer camp at the University of Chicago or for writing, or they want to go to a camp in Wyoming. All those things, we are supporting a range of those. And those two things. Now, there's also the part, which you said, you know, the great campuses and mm-hmm. gyms and things like that. So a lot of our schools have gyms. We're helping to invest in them, make them stronger. But I look at my own school. My kids go, and, you know, we don't have a gym. And, you know, my kids are going to do just fine. We use somebody else's gym for our games and everything else. Our focus is, we certainly have invested in gyms and boilers and tuck pointing and making sure schools are safe and that they're prepared for children. But more than anything, we want to make sure that the teachers and the curriculum and all the manipulators that go into a classroom, that those are as good. And in fact, I would say in some places, we're probably outperforming. They're, frankly, a lot better than manipulators and things in my kids' school.
Yeah.
And I think that these kids, you know, where they're coming from, they need all the opportunities they can get. And so we are over-investing in that to make sure that the school is really as good as it can be. And we probably should have been doing that more 30 years ago.
Well, let me ask. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then I want to ask about that, about the concept of overinvesting, because that is going to play it a little bit in the public sector as well when you see that the new educational formula
that
looks for private donations, but also the ability to go to private school on public money.
Yep.
And that might have an issue when you're talking about, you know, they're not overinvesting in that situation.
He's
you guys
exactly
are.
Right.
Joshua Hale's my guest. He's the president and CEO of the Big Shoulders Fund, around since 1986, helping fund students who want to go to Catholic schools. They've raised over $300 million towards that cause. Josh is my guest tonight on the Download in Chicago Business. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us.
It's business time.
Welcome back to the Download in Chicago Business. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Joshua Hale. He's the president and CEO of the Big Shoulders Fund, a fund that's been around since 1986, over 30 years of helping students in the Chicago area essentially get scholarships to go to Catholic schools and help keep those schools afloat. Right before the break, we were talking about competition. You never think about it because we're talking about students, and students don't really, it's not really about numbers and bottom line when you're talking about students. But hypothetically, there's a lot of competition for those students now, whether it be public schools and the selective enrollment programs, whether it be charter schools we've seen. The fact that private schools are going to get a bump, not just Catholic schools, but private schools with the new educational system in place in the state of Illinois. The Catholic schools have to think about that, about the fact that competition for students at this point is bigger than it ever has been?
Yeah, I for sure. You know, it's funny, if you go back to 86, when Big Show started, you know, before that, Catholic schools opened the doors each year. They had lots of students come in and fill the, just because that was the way people lived. And a lot has changed since then, just in terms of religious habits and things like that.
Right.
But there's still great interest in these schools in all areas, you know, in and outside the city. But there is increasing competition in the inner city, I would say, in under-resourced communities, as charters and the public schools. Everybody's getting stronger, and I would say that that's a great thing. And I have always, you know, tried to put us in light of more of a puzzle that, you know, we have so many kids who are not getting access to a quality education. And if competition or partnership or friendship or friend, whatever it is that helps us to serve more children, you know, my God, good.
Yeah.
And so I'm all in favor. I only see us as one. You know, we're not for every student. This city needs a strong public school system. And we need the best schools that could possibly be available in every neighborhood.
Yeah. And you mentioned, and it's also in the research as well, as when a Catholic school closes, it has a negative effect.
Yep.
Because it is an institution in the community. And we saw that with public schools as well, the 50 plus public schools that closed. That was an argument against doing that.
Yep.
So you strongly believe in the idea that institutions, neighborhood by neighborhood, are essential to fend off the negative aspects of Chicago life.
That's exactly.
Violence, crime, thing like that.
No different than the downtown is healthy because we have a great symphony, we have a great ballet, we have a great things that pull people toward the city. And I remember years ago when I started Big Show, it was when I asked some of the board, he said that he was going to a meeting for the Joffrey Ballet to raise money. I said, I didn't know you were interested in ballet. And he said, I'm not. He said, but the institution matters to the city. Mm. And someone asked me to help, so I'm helping raise money for it. And that always stuck with me, that this city is almost as only as strong as the institutions that we build and that we help support. And so, you know, whether it's the library or the Boys and Girls Club or the Catholic school, the Lutheran school or the Jewish school or the public school, the charter school, institutions matter, things that pull people toward a neighborhood. And, you know, I think that that's something we're all realizing more. And I understand how the city got to the point of closing 50 schools and everything else, but there is a downside to that, and they're trying to fill that and build other schools. And I think that that's they're putting a lot of effort in to fill it. It just – it does change the dynamic. And so we're trying to be additive and help keep these schools not only open but vibrant. We're trying to invite kids in on weekends and after-school programming, that this is a community-based organization.
Yeah, and I do think that there is a competitive advantage if you're over-investing.
Yeah.
And on paper, when you're looking at a budget – we're doing the download in Chicago business, but you're looking at a budget, I would assume that there's a line item for how many students you can have at whatever price. And it would be, from a business standpoint, easier to say – keep that at the baseline as low as it possibly could. And that's what you're going to get from scholarship help from the state of Illinois. That's what you're going to get when it comes to some other schools. But that's where you get the competitive advantage of making that baseline, what you
that's
provide
exactly
to
right
students, more.
You know, it's funny when you're about the budget, because it is funny. I had come out of management consulting years and years ago, and it doesn't take – my kids could figure this out. If you were to look at our program, our schools, you'd say, boy, this makes no business sense. It doesn't make any business sense because the budgets don't work. You have to raise enough money and they don't have enough to pay. It just – it doesn't work. What does work is that the school provides great education in the output of where these children go, whether they go on to a – from elementary school on to a Catholic high school or a selective public enrollment or a great charter school, that they're on a better track because of that. And when we track those kids through, you know, we have 95% graduating from college. We have 89% actually showing up in college the year after high school graduation. And so when I look at the numbers in the city and the nation, and we graduate three times national rate from college, they come back here and contributing. Or they go to a great career. But the budget part is critical, that if we don't watch those numbers, we're in trouble. But on the other hand, I always say to our board, this isn't a saving money activity. This is soul-filling work for us. We do this because it fills our soul to be partners with these great communities and to help children get on a better path to a brighter future.
Joshua Hale is the president and CEO of Big Shoulders Fund. Since 1986, they've raised $300 million to the cause of giving scholarships to give students an opportunity to be in Catholic schools here in the city of Chicago and beyond. Josh, thanks for being here. I appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
It's fascinating.
Me.
I would have never have. I think about this topic, and it's one that, you know, if you're not Catholic and you're not in it, you're not paying attention. But to really get into this, it's really fascinating. I'd love to have you back.
We'd love to come
appreciate
back.
Appreciate it. Thank you,
Justin.
And if you care, coming up, Big Shoulders Fund has the Bowl for Big Shoulders coming up Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. Of course, the 10-pin bowling lounge, 6 to 9. It's a fundraiser for Big Shoulders. Bowl for Big Shoulders. You can find out all that information at BigShouldersFund.org. Of course, that segment sponsored by Signature Bank. As of course, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. All right, coming up, we're going to talk Block Club Chicago and how we should be covering Chicago neighborhoods. Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Artie Lang, the great comedian who was featured, who was a star on the show Crashing on HBO. His episode called Artie aired on Sunday, which was really about his character's issues with heroin addiction. But if you watch that show, you know life imitates art so well in the way that Artie Lang is playing himself. And Artie Lang, of course, off the show and in real life has had many issues with drugs and relapse. And we're going to talk with him about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight. Artie Lang. Well, tonight, let's pretend that we have the money to start our own news media outlet. What do you guys think? Huh? What would it take to thoroughly cover the news that matters to Chicago with quality? What are we talking about? Are we talking about millions of reporters? Maybe video only, right? Maybe user input? Drones? Get drones in the action? We saw what good reporting could do in real life with DNA Info, which had deployed a slew of reporters to walk the beat, if you will, telling the stories of the neighborhoods. This was an award-winning venture that had become a trusted routine part of the Chicago news ecosystem till it was abruptly ended by Joe Ricketts. He was the guy who was owning, I guess he was the benefactor and the money. Since that time, the dailies and other media outlets have tried to sell or tell those stories as best they could, but even they would tell you that it's next to impossible to give local coverage to everything in this day and age when media resources are at a premium. Enter Block Club Chicago. Three DNA regulars have started a new digital enterprise to pick up where DNA Info left off. How are they planning to do what many have tried before? And is it time for us to face the facts that if you want your news, quality news, drone news, you're going to have to pay for it? But that's not all. When Block Club announced that they were starting up shop, they opened up a Kickstarter and set a goal for $25,000. To this day, with 15 days remaining, they have hit that goal and more, raising $139,000. Wow. Brings up another great question. Can you crowdfund the news? In studio with me tonight to talk about Block Club Chicago and all these issues, the future of local news, Seamus Toomey, the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago, Stephanie Lulay, who's the managing editor, and Jen Sabella, the director of strategy. You guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
What
thanks.
A whirlwind week. I mean, it's been a little bit more than a week that was announced that you guys were coming out, and what a tremendous, tremendous outpouring of support. I mean, were you guys surprised of all the people that have come out of the woodwork, not just the Kickstarter, but people coming out wishing you well?
You know, we knew it was going to be a feel-good story when it came out, because so many people had told us how much they liked DNA and how much they missed it right when we closed. So we suspected it was going to go pretty well, but we really had no idea, for one, that the Kickstarter was going to blow up like it did. People were just sharing it like crazy, and you know, a lot of $25 donations, $50 donations, some hundred, well, you know, some bigger ones. Thank you, everyone that contributed. But yeah, I mean, we're at like 2,500 people, individual people, wow, have backed it and signed up for a subscription. So it's been overwhelming.
It really is. Something that Chicago needs. When you guys obviously were part of DNA Info abruptly closing up shop, did you right away say, you know what, I'm not going to stop this mission. I'm going to continue. This is something we want to do. Or did it take a couple drunken nights for you guys to go, you know what, I got an idea? How did it come about that you guys that dove headfirst into this project?
I was like, we got to do this. I mean, like, once I talked to everyone, like, the three of us were like, yeah, we got to do this. I actually had another job at the time, and I was, like, there, and I was like, I have to do something. Like, I have to do something to get it back. It was just, like, it was just weighing on me, and I'm like, now is the time. Like, people are going to miss it. The people are still here. There's a lot of support right now. And also just people came out of the woodwork being like, we want to help you. We want to help you get funding. Let us know, like, what we can do for you. And I was like, you know, we have to talk, you know, right now the door is open for us to do something. So we decided to take a leap.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple drunken nights, though.
Yes, there were. Yeah.
Stephanie, same question to you. And especially when you talk about I don't want to call it an addiction, but this idea that, you know, there is a calling to this kind of work, especially when you're in a newsroom and you're doing something that is successful and you're covering the stories of Chicago, it's hard to walk away with that, especially when a traumatic way that it ended.
Yeah, and listen, it's fun to do the news. You know this, right? But I will say, like, the work that we were doing at DNA Info felt so important because, you know, we were seeing aldermen being covered for the first time ever, not knowing how to respond to a reporter showing up, local school councils, things like that. You know, a lot of these neighborhoods and aldermen and the people of power in the neighborhoods were being covered for the first time ever. And we had to keep that going, of course.
Yeah, that's amazing. You think about that. That's so many times that the people who might be in power or people who have never been covered before, had to interact with a reporter. You know, they're sitting there eating their sandwich, and they're like, this is my life, and here comes the DNA Info saying, hey, what's this question about this? Why are all these tires in the playground? And, you know, they're stumbling and bumbling, trying to figure out that, oh, yes, they are accountable after all.
Right, and we sort of took it from a different angle. You know, as opposed to covering stuff once it reached City Hall, we tried to get it at the neighborhood level. When the alderman first proposed it to, you know, 10 people in the coffee shop, or the developer, you know, was speaking to the condo development next door. And, you know, I always felt like you get a much less varnished, you know, presentation at that point when it's at the entry level. Plus, you can sort of get to stuff before, you know, before it's a done deal. So we were always excited about that. Going out to, you know, CAPS meetings where, you know, sometimes there would be 10 people at the CAPS meetings, but the commander would be there talking, you know, giving real answers to questions from real people. It wasn't just sort of a canned press release, this happened. You know, you'd have the woman on the house on the corner asking, hey, what happened last night? And, you know, the commander knows, you know, what happened. So he would give the full story, and we would be there, you know, writing it all down in the corner.
Jen, there's also something interesting about the way the media works. A lot of times, those people in power, as you just mentioned, Stephanie, they may be close-lipped, or they may be in no comment form because of the media that's approaching them and the way that it's glossed over, or it might just be they know that it's going to be not a hit piece, but they know it's going to be something that has already bubbled up to this point, so no comment. I would assume that having ground level beat reporters be able to be there to hear their stories, to hear their point of view, to understand from the ground level what a story is they're trying to do or what they're trying to accomplish, might actually help when it comes to getting their story or being able to tell a story about what's happening in a neighborhood.
Definitely. And I think that another thing about that is our reporters were there all the time. So if it was an alderman wanted to get a story out about, you know, a coat drive, we would do that story. And no one else is going to do that story. And they knew that. So they knew that they're going to call us back and they're going to give us, you know, the drawings of the architecture plan of a development that's coming up, and they will, you know, answer the questions. It's a little bit of give and take. It's like that in, you know, reporting in general. But yeah, showing up, and you, like Seamus said, when you have to answer the lady in the corner and a reporter sitting there, you can't BS the lady in the corner.
Yeah, right?
She's not going to be there for it. So the reporter in the room, I mean, I think at first we got kicked out of some meetings and we had to be like, hey, First Amendment, y'all. But people would be like, you can't be here. And we're like, yeah, we can. But just no one had showed up in
they
so many years
yeah,
that
right.
they didn't know how to handle it.
Okay, so I have a couple. Let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about, so Block Club Chicago, everything we just talked about was the success of DNA Info. This is a new venture, and I want to talk about what's going to be similar and what's going to be different with Block Club Chicago than the predecessor DNA Info. In studio tonight, Seamus Toomey, Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay. We're having a conversation, not just about that, but the future of local news and how we're going to pay for it. That's here in the download tonight. Stay with us. Continuing our conversation here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking Block Club Chicago, new startup news organization here in Chicago that's going to be in full launch in the middle of April. In studio tonight, Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay, and Seamus Toomey, all the various titles associated. We'll get to those again. But yeah, before the break, I mean, we were talking about what made DNA Info, and you are all your alumni of DNA Info, and you all talked about how great that coverage was because you were able to get hyper-local and really do things that weren't done before. How is that? Is that essentially just change the masthead? DNA Info's out, Block Club Chicago's in, Seamus?
Pretty much. I mean, basically, that's what our readers told us that they liked. You know, it's we're trying to get those stories that the other media in town aren't doing. I mean, let's be honest, there's some great media outlets in town, and they cover a lot of big stories. And but what is missed is the neighborhood stories, you know, the stuff that's, that they are not going to go out and send a TV crew out to and take a risk on. You make it some news out of this development meeting. We're more willing to take that risk because we know we're going to get a probably a neighborhood story or five.
What are you risking? I mean, I guess what you're risking is there's no news there, and then you've wasted resources in that regard. Is that the risk?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, if you've got two news trucks and you blow one on a snoozer of a story, you know, what are you going to fill right. up the newscast with?
I mean, how often did that happen at DNA Info, where reporters would go out and you would go to something and there really wasn't news there and you didn't have anything to report on?
It was rare because like. There wasn't a too small, really. Like, to the neighborhood, it matters. Even if it might not matter to the larger audience who's, like, watching the TV news at night, on a neighborhood level, if you subscribe to your newsletter and your Rogers Park newsletter, and it's a Rogers Park meeting, and it's about a, you know, problem house on the corner, and there's a lot of, like, or a restaurant that got shut down because of mm-hmm. roaches or mm-hmm. whatever, you care, because that's, like, a restaurant you visit. So it's something that, yeah, not a major outlet might pick up, but people who live there care about it. So we rarely skipped or did nothing on a meeting we covered, even if it was just a small story.
What I loved about DNA Info, and I think a lot of people have responded to this in the same way hearing about Block Club Chicago, was the mass that you guys could create. I mean, to be able to cover Chicago in the way you did and be able to for me to be sent links from people who are like, did you see this story? And it'd be Auburn Gresham. Then, did you see this story? Is Albany Park. Did you see this story, you know, out in the West Side? As you talk about resources, and we're going to get to that conversation, obviously the scope in which DNA Info worked was much larger than what you guys have been able to at least at the startup, have. How do you do what DNA Info did, where there's a mad rush to cover everything and do it in a very crystallized, formatable way when you don't have the resource?
Well, I think to start, you know, we want to keep our reporters assigned by geography, assigned by neighborhood, right? And I think we are going to be smaller starting up, and we're being kind of brutally honest about that. We're starting with six neighborhood reporters. We were starting with five because of the Kickstarter. Thank you, readers. We are able to hire a sixth reporter full-time, which is amazing. Will make such a difference. But this is smaller. We have big plans to grow, but we want to grow sustainably. You know, we don't have a billionaire backing us this time.
Yeah, and I guess the question would just be, how do you choose? I mean, if you're going to have six reporters covering six areas of Chicago, What goes into the thought process of what neighborhoods are on the blueprint to begin, and which neighborhoods might be second or third once the money comes in?
We just tried to be representative. So we wanted to make sure to have some neighborhoods on the south side covered, some neighborhoods on the west side covered, a little north side, you know, a little central. And we also went by our reporters who were, you know, really the most familiar faces in their neighborhoods, you know, like Elisa Hauser in Wicker Park.
Yeah, right.
You know, everyone knows her. She works out of the furniture shop on Milwaukee Avenue. She's covered the neighborhood for 12 years. That's someone we knew we had to have on board. And in terms of the places we are missing out on, we have a amazing batch of freelancers. And as soon as we went live, our inboxes were flooded with people. And we've definitely set aside a budget to have like a robust freelance budget. So we have like a pretty amazing, like almost every neighborhood that was covered by DNA, there's a freelancer and some who has offered to contribute stories. So it won't be as many as DNA was putting out.
Would it be the same concept that each day that you go to Block Club Chicago, there would be stories at the, if not the volume, but the quality of DNA Info, where every day it flipped over and there was new stuff like a newspaper? I mean, it was even set up like a newspaper. Is it the same concept you're talking about when you deliver this stuff, that people can rely on Block Club Chicago each and every day? Or are you thinking more like maybe the Reader or other places where it's a little bit more, they know there's a deadline on a Thursday and there's some stuff that's going to trickle out, but it's not, the relationship with the Reader is not check in every morning at 6 a.m.
No, we're going to keep pumping it out. I mean, we're going to have a morning newsletter. It's going to be loaded, hopefully with all exclusive stuff. We're going to, you know, we hardly ever hold any story, you know, just for too long, because, you know, part of our model is, you know, we want to be first. You know, if you're the first person to write about some big scoop, you know, that's the one that gets shared. That's when everyone talks about. So even if it means, you know, let's get out one sentence about, you know, some famous theater is on fire. Let's, you know, we don't need to throw in all the background right away. Let's just say the theater's on fire, you know, come back later. So, no, we're going to be, we are going to be busy, absolutely. We have fewer reporters, fewer editors, so there's going to be, you know, a little less volume. I mean, we were probably writing 40, 50 stories a day at DNA Info.
That's crazy.
And, you know, there were, some of them were big, some of them were small, a lot of them were small, some of them were, like Jen said before, maybe like the coat drive, but you know what? You know,
well, that it's competitive. Sometimes, when you think about it, and it's competitive with the dailies. I mean, we've seen there's been a shrinking landscape when it comes to how many stories are written per day. I think it's clear. I remember a couple years ago looking at how many stories were put out by each daily, and it was in the 75 to 100 area that was being put out. So to be in that same space, that's a tall order for a small staff.
Yeah, and we also, you know, we always tried to get the quirky stories as well. You know, the ones that. Honestly, like the ones that I kind of liked, you know, where someone would want to go like, oh my God, did you see that? Like that, you know, that person, like, I've been talking about that guy in the corner for years and someone finally asked him what his deal is. You know, that sort of stuff that honestly, the other media, we always heard from them how they would come and read our stuff in the morning and figure out, you know, what would be there, some of the stories they would follow up
for on. For the three of you, and we're now a half hour into this convo, so we can get real. That's got to be daunting. Right. I mean, I there's parts of me that feel like I can never go back now. Like if I stopped doing this show and I didn't have the ability to prep every night for 4 hours or whatever it's going to be, I would be lost. I'd be a lost soul. But at the same time, I also understand how stressful it is. And I find that's a stressful venture DNA Info was. So for you guys to jump back in and start up form, are you concerned at all about the stress level and what it takes to get this job done?
I don't think so. I mean, I was there 6 months before DNA Info launched, so I helped carve out the beats and hire everyone. And I was there when we were building up, you know, a backlog of stories to go live for launch. And it's just as exciting as it was then, but I feel like we know better now. I mean, we know the stories that we're not going to do now, that didn't perform well, or that the people in the neighborhoods didn't like. We also know better. We're not going to chase anyone. We're going to do our own stories. And I think that that's the big part about DNA that made us stand apart is we didn't, if we're putting out 40 or 50 stories a day, they weren't stories you find on every other news channel or news website in town. We were unique.
And you had to learn that as an organization after years of saying, oh, geez, you know, people are gravitating to this, maybe not to the same story that everybody's talking about.
Right. It's a crowded space. And we're not like ignorant to that. But to stand out and to get people to pay for your content, it has to be unique. It has to be original. It has to be something they can't get 9,000 other places.
Yeah. Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay, Seamus Toomey in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll get the update on tonight's news. I know there's flooding in the area. We'll come back. And then let's talk about how we're going to pay for this, how this is all going to go, how you guys see this business plan working out, and how we can help, but how Block Club Chicago looks to sustain itself, especially not just this, but also in the wake of what we've seen hyperlocal and local neighborhood news sites go through in the last 5 to 10 years. So we'll have that conversation here on The Download. So stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, Block Club Chicago. We're having a good conversation about how we see the future of local news, especially when we're covering Chicago neighborhoods. In studio tonight, Seamus Toomey, he is the editor-in-chief, Stephanie Lulay, who's the managing editor, and Jen Sabella, who's the director of strategy for Block Club Chicago, which just put out a Kickstarter when they announced that they were taking over. Essentially, these are three former DNA Info editors who have moved on to start their own news operation. And they put out a Kickstarter just at the beginning. They wanted to raise $25,000. And they still have 15 days left, and they're at $139,000, which says a lot about commitment, loyalty, readership, and news consumers, which I guess is where we're at right now. How do you see this working out? I mean, you're going to go with a subscription series, right? You're going to go with the idea that if I want the news that you guys are producing at the neighborhood level, I got to pay for it.
That's right. You know, but one of the lessons we learned at DNA Info was people liked us, but there's only so many, you know, pennies you can round up on banner ads and such to really fund you know, a good professional right. newsroom. So that is a really, really long road. So we want to flip it around. We say, let's go right to the people that appreciate us, that get value out of us, and say, hey, is this worth $4.99 a month to you? If so, sign up, you know, sign up for a year, buy subscriptions for people that you think would benefit from this that maybe can't afford it. And, you know, let's find out. I mean, we had enough people that told us after we closed that, hey, if you just asked us, we would have paid. And we're like, now we're asking.
How do you set yourself apart? I mean, because right now you're going to have the Tribune. Sometimes it's free right now, but I mean, the Tribune, the Washington Post, New York Times, all the way down the line, the Cranes here in Chicago. Everyone has really moved and are moving more rigidly to a subscription model. How do you guys set yourself apart? Does it have to be the reporting?
I think absolutely. And I think it's exclusive content that is focused on the neighborhoods. You know, most of the stories you got at DNA Info, you would not see anywhere else. Maybe a day or two later, you'd see them other places, but we were constantly breaking stories. And I really have to say that that's because of the strength of our reporters, knowing their neighborhood so well, always being out, always beating the pavement, and people trust them. That's why they get these great stories time and time again.
All right, Jen. So you and I have had this conversation. I feel like we've had this conversation our whole careers. But how do you, when we think about it, I mean, obviously doing the subscription series, there is some goof. I just think about the past of news, where we've had a lot of local sites try to take this on and have failed, and or have had done valiant work and weren't able to keep the keep it up and running. But my big question is, where did this all go wrong? Because at some point or another, I was paying 35 cents for a Sun-Times. Before the internet came along, I was paying 50 cents for a Tribune. And now you're in this situation where people almost have this expectation that they're supposed to get their news for free. It's the internet. I can get my news wherever I want. If there's a paywall, I'll go somewhere else. How do you, I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, how do you get past the mistakes of the news business past?
I know I was saying before, I've been ranting about this for so many years. News outlets, major news organizations did not care about the internet. They did not pay attention when it was coming. When I was at the Sun-Times, I was like, hey, I'm working overnights. Let me publish news. And they were like, oh, no, you're just going to, you know, just do your just report and let's not show it to anyone. and you know, that's what it was. And when you're not paying attention, like, to this giant thing that's happening around you, they were just like, let's just throw it on. Okay, we have that guy in the corner over there. He's a nerd. He knows what the internet is. Let him put the news stories on it. And let's just keep doing our print and selling our ads. And another thing about that makes us different is there aren't any ads. Your computer isn't going to shut down because you have 45 pop-ups crashing your browser. And I think that user experience is huge for people who want to be willing to pay for news. I mean, I think of like ad-free, like, I mean, you pay for Spotify and you pay the extra few bucks to not have the ads on Spotify or whatever other subscriptions you have monthly. And I do think that's another thing that's happening now. And we're kind of coming at a time where people are like, okay, this is something unique that I value and that I'll pay for it. So I think listening to the audience, keeping up on innovations, keeping up on how people are consuming news, bringing it to them where they are. We knew that Facebook was a huge drawer of traffic for us. Facebook was a giant priority for us. And that's why so many of our stories went viral. And newsletters. Like, we decided to try out these like neighborhood specific newsletters. At first I was like, this is going to like, these are too small. Like, no one's going to want this. We just have to do one big newsletter. And I couldn't have been more wrong about that. Like, people loved the very, very local Facebook pages and newsletters. And we just kept listening to our audience. And so I think that that is, you know, the future of news is listen to people and don't think that because of you did something this way for 100 years, you have to keep doing it this
way. Well, Seamus, I mean, the past mistakes of the news business, you know, especially the print moving into digital, has given this idea almost like I feel like they're drug dealers in the way that they're like, hey, have this stuff for free, take it free. Someday we're going to make you pay for it. And it's created this strange thing that news consumers feel like they're supposed to. It's their right. It's the internet. They should get it for free. How, I mean, do you see that? I don't understand how. I mean, because I get the concept that I need to become a subscriber, but I'll be the first to say that I also have that in me where I'm like, I know I can get this for free somewhere else.
Right. I mean, we all like free. I mean, free is, you know, we'll always look for free first. But if something is given to you and then taken away and you're like, there's a void here in my, you know, my news life. I no longer know about what's happening, you know, in the, you know, right down my block. You know, we're gambling on the idea that, you know, that they are going to go back and say, all right, you got me. And I can't find it anywhere else. It's like, I can't just look for an aggregation of a Block Club Chicago story. It's the first time I've done that. you know, because oftentimes, you know, it's just not going to be out there. You know, the other places aren't going to care about, you know, the new coffee shop, you know, in Ravenswood or wherever. But so, I mean, if there's nowhere to steal it from, you know, they're going to maybe have eventually come to us because people, you know, honestly, people like to know something that their neighbors don't know. And that's what we're really selling to them. We're going to tell you something about your neighborhood that other people don't know yet. And then you get to be the smartest guy in the block.
Yeah, I wonder. I think it's amazing to think about where we're at. And I think about what we saw with the end of DNA Info. And also a lot of other companies that have fallen by and who were original indigenous digital news providers, right? A lot of the idea of one benefactor or millionaires and billionaires being able to fund this went awry, where they said, I'm not making enough money out of this thing. I'm out, right? And that was taken away from communities and from journalists' work. You've seen others where they've tried different ways to use ads, advertising. You've seen the floor fall out on digital advertising, and it affects a lot of the local guys. So the question is, what makes you guys in position right now to capitalize on user habits, on the status of digital media, where we're at, just the overall? Do you feel like you could do this today and you couldn't do it 5 years ago? You couldn't do it 7 years ago? What makes you confident that Block Club Chicago will do the things that, say, the news co-op couldn't?
I think we're seeing, you know, attitudes about paying for the news change in real time. And, you know, in a lot of ways, this isn't a new thing. Like, you brought up newspaper subscriptions, or we've talked about supporting your public broadcast station, right? People have chipped in those ways for a long time. But in terms of paying for news on the internet, we are seeing a shift in attitude, I think. And we hope that we can capitalize on that.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you mentioned public broadcasting. They do the pledge drive. Everyone loves a pledge drive. You get a tote bag, the whole bit, right? But you're seeing more and more other areas, and I think of music and arts and other places where they're going direct to their fans. We've had a lot of conversations from musicians on this program where saying, hey, we kickstarted the new record. People paid for it, and that's how we were able to pay for studio costs. You think that there's a future of crowdfunding the news? Do you think that that could be a way to take from what public radio's done for 30-some-odd years and bring the pledge drive to the internet and be able to source and fund things like Block Club Chicago?
Definitely. I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with the public radio model, but we have tote bags for our Kickstarter subscribers. That was very important to us.
That's obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah. I always loved it. It always made me feel like, I mean, it's something that I listened to every day and I felt like a part of it. And I was, you know, getting a mug or a tote bag is kind of fun and you feel like you're part of it. And I think for what we're doing, being a neighborhood news site, being a Block Club, I think like membership just makes so much sense. Like really like feeling like a sense of belonging. And so many people we've talked to since DNA shut down said, you know, I was able to text a reporter. I was able to, for the first time in my life, I had access to a reporter. So if something was going on, I could actually call someone up and tell them about it. And that just doesn't really exist anymore. Everyone's, you know, on Twitter and it just seems like so far away, or in a downtown newsroom, it seems far away from somebody, you know, in Inglewood. But we, our reporters, really got to know people in the neighborhoods and developed relationships with them. And I think that that's something people are willing to, you know, $5 a month, that's pretty measly. I mean,
Put on our business hats and just the question, you're going to have points in this. This is a startup. And a lot of times people get into the media business because they want to make a profit. And that's it. I mean, look at all of the way our newspapers have changed hands and continue to change hands. Our media companies, people see this as a profitable venture. That's why billionaires got involved in the first place. Right? Yep. They see this as an investment. So in your model, you're not necessarily looking to make a profit. How is yours different than, say, some of the online, the Gawkers and the other places that have come through and done things differently but still fit into the news category?
Yeah, and I, you know, we're not here to say that trying to make a profit is a bad idea. I mean, America's built on it. But we made a decision early on that, listen, our main goal here is to be sustainable. Like, we don't want to be back out on the street in a year. Like, how can we find a way to pay reporters a good wage, tell people what's going on in their neighborhoods, and keep it going for years to come? So we made the decision early on, let's structure it as a nonprofit. Any money that comes in, we're going to put it right back into the business. We are going to go out to charitable foundations that support this sort of thing and ask them for contributions. We're going to go directly to our readers for donations. We're going to ask for subscriptions. You know, we're going to try to set up as many different revenue streams as possible, because we have a theory about how many people may subscribe in the first couple of years, but we still need to prove that out. So in the meantime, we're hoping to build up some other revenue streams. Tote bags, is that what we're going to sell us for?
Yeah.
No, those are free if you contribute. But, you know, other things, we've got a backer out in New York that's hugely interested in us proving that sustainable journalism is out there. They're building the platform for us and for some other newsrooms around the country. They're playing a role in some of our initial funding. We've got a lot of different ways to fund it, and we're but we're also confident that along the way that it's going to be the readers themselves that are going to really do most of the revenue.
Okay, my last question tonight. You know, there's been so much made about the crumbling community, right? Not knowing our neighbors, not understanding where we live, not having pride in where we live. We saw that kind of play out in the 2016 election, where that was kind of seized upon, that there needs to be more about the good old days of remembering where we're from and the communities that we're from. For you guys being at DNA Info and Block Club Chicago, to be able to hear the calls that, oh, it's not like it used to be, communities aren't the same, you don't know your neighbors, everything is deteriorating, to the actual, you know, the work that you guys do on the ground level to be able to report on said communities, is it accurate? I mean, are we in a position where we're less of a community than we ever have been, or is that a misnomer? And through your guys' editing and reporting, you've seen otherwise.
We've definitely seen otherwise. I mean, just in the last few weeks, us driving around the city, doing meetings with different people, whether it's looking at office spaces or just like hearing people out or meeting reporters, just the stories we see and the sense of community we see. We've met a lot with Jamal Cole from My Block, My Hood, My City, and just the community that he creates down in Chatham. And we were just in a co-working space up on the Northwest Side, and it was just amazing. There were like 1,000 stories. We were like, oh my God, we were like, need to write all of this down immediately. But it just showed so much community. It was people who all, like, they all decided we're going to work together because there's no one doing this, and there's an accountant over there, and there's a designer over there, and they're all like neighbors helping each other make, like, be entrepreneurs, and they're all helping each other out and coming together. And those are the types of stories we told at DNA, and I think that those stories are so ignored in especially national media about Chicago, and Chicago is so demonized. So I think people are fed up with that false narrative, and we hope to tell the real stories of Chicago.
All right. Stephanie Lulay, Jen Sabella, Seamus Toomey, they are Block Club Chicago. Look for it coming up, a formal launch in the middle of April. You guys, I can't thank you enough for coming out. The Kickstarter is still up. 15 more days. They've raised $139,000 to a goal of $25,000. That's good even by public radio standards. You guys, thank you very much for coming in and being my guest tonight at the big table.
Thank you. And blockclubchicago.org if you want to give to that Kickstarter.
All right. Well, tomorrow, join the live audience for the Download Happy Hour with me, Justin Kaufman, at WeWork Kinsey. That's tomorrow. That's Wednesday, February 21st from 5 to 6:30, sponsored by Lender, Chicago's small business leader. We're going to feature special guests. I'm excited, man. Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor is going to be there. Jamal Cole, My Block, My City, My Hood, My City. That's coming up. Also, Yuri Lane, musician, will be there. It's got great guests lined up. Also have a Q&A afterwards, the happy hour, so there'll be drinks and appetizers. All you got to do is RSVP. There's still time to register, WGNradio.com/events, or at the WGN Radio Facebook events page. I think I'm going to suit up for this one, too, since it's kind of a business theme. Bring out the new suit. So I'm thinking about. I don't want to get too crazy. I don't want to commit. I don't want to promise. You know, I might see some. I might put on a paisley shirt when I'm tomorrow and be like, maybe this is a look. I don't want to. You know, I just want to say right now what I'm wearing. You never do that, right? I might turn around quick in the mirror, look back, and be like, not a good look. Not looking how this Ryan Seacrest white slim fitting T-shirt or collared shirt fits. I want to go with something else. Anyway, that's coming up tomorrow, 5 o'clock special show live. How fun is that, right? At WeWork Kinsey, right around the corner from here. A happy hour download. Fun is that? Come on out. Get all the information at WGNradio.com. All right, we got some WGN Radio royalty in the house tonight. Ann Johnsos and Charlie Meyerson both here to talk about their big... Ann's taking her book, Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and she's putting it on stage, and she's brought in... I don't even know why you bring this guy.
I don't know why either.
I don't know why you would, but
we'll figure it out in the next half hour.
That's right. They're here. Thank you, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up here at 9:30, we're going to talk with Artie Lang, the comedian who was featured heavily. He's a huge role on the show Crashing on HBO. Do you watch that show, Charlie?
No.
It's great. Do you watch it?
I did watch him on the Mad Show.
Yeah. Mad TV, right?
Mad TV.
Yeah,
Mad TV.
The Mad Show.
Right. Well, that was a Broadway show in the 60s. Right. It was called The Mad Show, but Mad TV. You're right.
Anyway, Artie Lang is a star. They kind of do Pete Holmes as a stand-up comedian trying to make it. And Artie Lang plays himself in the show. And Sunday's episode was all about Artie's continuing struggles with heroin.
You mentioned it while we were driving in, and I was compelled to go home and just sort of, you know, binge.
I don't even think you need to be honest with you. A friend of mine was like, I've only watched one episode of season two. And the concept is Pete is kind of a dopey guy who wants to be a stand-up comedian, and Artie is there, and then there you go.
All right, I'm going
to
watch it.
Oh, good. My next guest, old key card, still worked to get her in the office. That's good. Longtime journalist, WGN producer Ann Johnsos has published her first book. It's called Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and the book documents actual conversations Ann and her husband had with their children. But it's not a children's book, per se. And it's not just a book, it's now a stage act. Potty Mouth will be on stage this Thursday night at the M Lounge in the South Loop, 1520 South Wabash Street. And Ann will share the stage with another parent and writer, journalist Charlie Meyerson.
Hi.
Charlie, the publisher of ChicagoPublicSquare.com. Both Ann and Charlie here tonight. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
It's like a homecoming of sorts. Charlie, not as much, but...
No,
I know.
They paid me to work at WGN for 2 years.
You remind me of that every time.
I know.
All right, let's start with the book, because this book is great, and it's... It's something that comes out of a project that you're putting a lot of this stuff on Facebook. But this is a lifetime project, of course. You have children who are middle school age. But talk about the process, because it started, obviously we started to gain traction on Facebook, but it started way before that.
Yeah, and so you have a 10-year-old. My girls are now 9 and 11. And when they were itty-bitty, I remember... They would just say, like, if they couldn't say balloon, they'd say bamoon or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, well, I must write this down. It's so precious. But we wrote it down. And then in around 2006, Facebook happened. And I was teaching at Northwestern, so I had access to Facebook before it was commonly, you know, acceptable. Right. And so I just started posting little funny things. But they did gain traction. And also, I was joking that the iPhone... is, you know, I can type things down as they say them, so I can really sort of live write, you know, or I'm live tweeting their lives. But so it all converged. Then it became sort of an online diary.
Yeah, and I mean, Charlie, you brought into this project because you're friends, but at the same time, you have spent your lifetime with your boys documenting their moves.
Yeah, we have three sons, the youngest of whom is 25, and none of whom will be named, identified by name in my presentation. They all have plausible deniability. But yeah, we made an early decision with our firstborn and then followed through with each of the other two boys that we would create journals and write journals. And so we have for each of them, from birth up until high school graduation, the same kinds of clever, funny things that Anne has been recording with her daughters. And when I saw Anne's posts on Facebook over the years, they were delightful, remarkable, funny. And every once in a while, I would chip in one or two of my corresponding stories to her Facebook page. And then our friend Karen Kring, who is the yeah. great connector in Chicago media, said, you guys should get on stage and do this together. And so it's Anne's show, but I'm happy to play a small role in the presentation.
And when you started with the journaling, was the goal just for posterity? Was the idea that we're just going to hold on to this so when they're older, we'll have fun looking at this? Or what did it turn into a creative pursuit?
It did, you know, and Charlie talked about a little bit, like, when you're a journalist, you're a journalist, so you document whatever you have. And so when I was home with the babies when they were little, I didn't have a lot of work going on, so I became the documenter of my life, right? And I wrote it down because I wanted to remember it. But as it has grown, the girls have, they've read it. They have memorized some of it. They quote themselves, which is hilarious to me. So it's become a really joyful sort of something we can share.
And as I mentioned, I mean, it's not a children's book per se, because a lot of the stuff might be, more adult type content. That's the fun part of a kid talking about their privates or things right. like that. But the point being, are there any things in the book where the girls are like, that's embarrassing?
We went through the manuscript before I sent it to anyone, and they did take some things out. And as we talked, I don't post the really, really private things, because that would be not good parenting. I'm saying good.
Did they have independent counsel as you went through the book with them?
Exactly. No, but we do have a therapy jar.
But I want to hear about that. Yeah. Is that in the book?
Nope, not yet. But the idea was they could refuse anything.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest doesn't like the whole idea of like people knowing about toots, but she also understands that when a 3-year-old toots, it's really funny, and it's not about an 11-year-old. We're
right,
not talking
right,
about an 11-year-old.
Right.
So, but it's really interesting. This book has sold to families, and the children do like it. And I don't know if it's because they resonate or maybe the drawings.
Yeah.
I never thought kids would be interested in it. And
well, I could see, I mean, the stories, and we'll read a couple of the stories coming up here after the break, but I mean, they are relatable and they're funny. I mean, they're funny in the way that what your daughters said are funny. So I can understand why kids would find it funny. I always love that concept of writing about your private life, but keeping things private.
Right.
And that we have a lot of artists on the program. We talk about what that is, that what's the right balance and striking that balance when you're approaching this work and seeing it as a creative outlet and possibly something you're going to share with the world. How often or how early does that question come up?
Well, it was helpful with Facebook in that I only had friends. You know, it wasn't public. It wasn't Twitter. So I had a trusted community. And so if something didn't fly, and I have a really good friend who totally thinks I don't talk straight enough when it comes to sex and gender and all that. And so she'll call me out on it. She's like, don't.
Really?
Don't let them believe that. You know, tell them what it is. And so that kept me honest. And if something really sort of, you know, set off a little bit of a match, I would just delete it. I would say, if this is going to make my kids upset later, or if it's going to, you know, anyway, it's supposed to be just a fun look at parenting,
right?
And a send up, right? You know, nothing controversial.
Well, you've made that pact with your boys, Charlie, so that they get plausible deniability, but I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, putting out their stories for.
Yeah, well, you know, this is something that all parents now deal with in the era of Facebook. I mean, all parents are, I think, are inclined to brag or at least share stories about their kids with their friends. And so with every post, every one of us has to make that decision. Is this something that is appropriate to share? Mm-hmm. And I frequently now am told by my sons in particular that I share too much, not just about them, but about me. And so that
now we do that too. Now
the foot's on the shoes on the other foot.
Now that our son is 10 years old, if we post his image in any form on Instagram or Facebook, he gets the permission.
It's interesting because we're just getting there.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are very aware that I like to take their pictures, and sometimes they'll just say, don't, or don't post this. And then
Don't post this, right.
They're not on Facebook yet, so they have no idea.
They will, though. They will.
They will.
It'll all come back to roost. Ann Johnson's in studio. She is the author of Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, of course, longtime journalist here in Chicago and former employee here at WGN. Of course, Charlie Meyerson as well, who will be part of the show where Potty Mouth goes from book to stage in the South Loop on Thursday night at M Lounge, 1520 South Wabash Street. We will talk more about the staged version of this and get some readings here in the second half of this segment. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here in studio, Ann Johnsos and Charlie Meyerson. Ann's book, of course, Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and it will be turned from a book to a stage show at the M Lounge in the South Loop on Thursday night. That's coming up this February 22nd, 1520 South Wabash Street. The show starts at 6:30. Ann, where's this idea come from? I mean, we heard that Karen was the one who brought it together, but what have you guys done for this? I mean, is it the idea that you just get up there and read your book and then Charlie plays the flute?
No, there will be no flute.
No flute?
And not by me anyway at this performance. But thank you for remembering.
Actually, Charlie organized. So, you know, Karen said you guys should get together. And I was thinking, okay, she's like the fairy godmother I never had. And then Charlie put together, you know, a working script, which just said, Ann, Charlie.
It was a lot of work, but I did it.
You did
a lot of copying and pasting, right. And my fingers were tired at the end, but it worked.
What are you going with? I mean, what's the concept that you want to do with the stage?
Well, Ann has done all the hard work. I mean, her book has broken out her funny stories by subject matter, and I said, Ann, pick the ones that you most want to tell, and then I'll search through the 31 years of, is actually, you know, 25 probably, years of documents that we have on our kids, and I'll try to find stories that more or less match up with yours. And so it really is Ann's show. I mean, it's her book. And I have a few accent points that I'll drop in along the way from our kids'
to go from journal to book to stage. How much editing goes into that? I mean, do you have to change the way you approach your work when you're performing it in a microphone?
Very much so for me, because I
we'll find out.
I know exactly. Right. Ask us Friday. I had to, you know, and Charlie helped. You know, some of my page stuff has a title that sort of indicates what the page, and you don't need that on stage. You don't need to sort of break it apart again and again.
Right, right.
I write the way my kids talk, which means that they have speech.
Yeah,
they had speech impediments. So it's actually easier for me to read the stuff because I'm channeling what they sounded like. So I think it's more fun to do it out loud.
Right, right. Are you trying to channel it? Is how they sounded?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So
we're going to hear a little bit of it too. Charlie, same thing for you?
Yeah. I mean, the early years for the kids are filled with that kind of phonetic spelling to capture the, you know, the mispronunciations and the enunciation problems they have. And then as they get older, and this is an experience that Ann has yet to experience, you get the more sarcastic, cynical remarks from the teenagers at the dinner table.
I was going to say, are you going to have part two, part three, part four of this kind of thing when the girls get bigger?
Well, I have enough for part two and part three if we want, even at this young age. But, you know, I did say that you kind of have to draw the line at like puberty. Because I don't know that anyone wants that discussed. I mean, well, probably some people do. But, you know, I think I have to stop there. But there are other books in line if anybody wants them. But so far, I'm not sure anybody does.
I think we do. Well, let's hear a little bit of Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains. This is Ann Johnson's book. This will also be on stage at M Lounge in the South Loop coming up on Thursday.
The topic we've chosen to share with you tonight is brutal honesty.
Oh, there we go. Good one. All right, take it away, guys.
5-year-old. Mommy, why don't you wear makeup when you drive me to school? Me. Why? I'm just dropping you off. I don't even get out of the car. 5-year-old. The car has windows.
This is an exchange with a 14-year-old. Him. Dad, my friend's dad gives him $50 for every A. Me, stepping into it. But his dad is hardly ever around. He travels a lot. Would you like me to give you the money and then never be around? Him. That would be a win-win situation.
3-year-old. I cute because I little. 6-year-old. That's because all little people are cute. Me. Right. When you're little, you're cute. As you get older, you become beautiful. 6-year-old. And when you get way old like mama, you get professional.
little cutting right there from the show that's going to be at the M Lounge in the South Loop coming up on Thursday. It's called Potty Mouth. In studio tonight, Ann Johnson and Charlie Meyerson, WGN royalty. Great to have you guys back here.
Royalty?
Well,
yeah, not Ann, maybe.
Ann,
yeah,
of course. No, no. Ann, of course. I'm not sure. But okay, former staff members.
Okay, exactly. Does that work?
Lackeys. It's so much fun to see you. It's great to see you. Listen to you, too.
The book is Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and it is a it's a great book, and it's also a lot of what friends of Ann have known for years from being friends on Facebook, and it's awesome to see it in print, and we look forward to part two, part three, part four, and part five. Charlie Meyerson will be on stage with Ann at M Lounge in the South Loop coming up here on Thursday, 1520 South Wabash Street, 6:30 p.m. And he's the publisher of ChicagoPublicSquare.com.
Sign up. It's a free daily email, ChicagoPublicSquare.com. Go there right now, and then I'll be able to brag to Justin after the show. You got me 10 new subscribers. ChicagoPublicSquare.com.
There you go. And Charlie, great to see you guys.
Great to see you. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, we're going to play The Worst. Sarah Alberton will be here. Catherine Pavanelli. It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, as it always, Tuesday night, 312-981-7200. Well, the last time my next guest was on the program, he ended up in the hospital shortly thereafter. The great Artie Lang was here over the summer, and he collapsed after shows at Thalia Hall. He's okay, and he's returned to his stand-up career and his role playing himself on the hit HBO show Crashing. And if you missed the episode this past Sunday, you missed an episode that featured Artie's issues, or his character's issues, with heroin addiction.
Artie, I know you're struggling. I believe
struggling. Struggling ain't the word, man. Struggling ain't the word. This is a physical thing. It's not just an emotional thing. It's physical getting off heroin.
I know.
I could go back. Honestly, I wish I could go back when a younger Artie did heroin for the first time in a hotel room on the road. And I wish I could tackle that guy. I wish I could tackle him and stop him from doing it. But it's over. It's just over.
You have an opportunity, okay? You've been handed this life. Don't you owe it to the people that love you?
Oh, my God.
Don't you owe it to your mom, your dad?
Honestly, I guess maybe I had it wrong. Maybe you do care a little too much. Honestly, maybe it's kind of creepy that you care too much.
Artie Lang has been a huge part of American comedy from his early days on Mad TV to stint as co-host with Howard Stern to his continuing brilliant career on stage and in podcasts. But Artie has also had a very public fight with drugs, addiction, and the law. He's been in and out of rehab, arrested, and is currently awaiting sentencing for heroin possession. That's why Crashing on Sunday was, in a way, reality television. Artie Lang announced to the world that he's sober again, fighting his demons one day at a time, and he joins me tonight on The Download. Artie Lang, thanks so much for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Hey, Justin, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming back. Before we start, yeah, the last time we had you on, we were excited talking about you coming back to Chicago, and then it was the week after that we got pictures and stories of you being hospitalized. Talk about that experience of being in Chicago and having to go to the hospital.
I love Chicago, especially in the summer. It's one of those places I always try to get to. I've been coming there for, over 20 years doing stand-up. And, my issues with drugs the damage that's done to my body and diabetes, that was something I got diagnosed with a few years ago, and that just throws a monkey wrench into everything. And I think people don't take diabetes that seriously because they hear it so much, and you see so many people living with it. They don't think like cancer when they hear diabetes. I mean, it's not that bad, but geez, it just affects everything. And of course, on the road, I always live like a crazy person, not having any medical issues like that. And when you combine all that stuff, it's not great. And I passed out, and I had to go right to the hospital.
Oh, man. I know. It was unbelievable to see that story pop up, and I'm glad to hear that you're okay.
You get in the hospital, and they regulate you. You know, they get you in a place where you're in a controlled environment. They control your blood sugar and everything, and that's great, but, you can't live there.
Yeah,
I don't want to, believe me.
Yeah. This episode of Crashing on Sunday was brilliant, and it's one that, when you think about great, memorable television, this episode will come to mind. For you to be a part of this show and to be in season two, why don't we start there? It has evolved as a program. I've enjoyed watching the characters deal with big existential crises, talking about religion and faith, and in this episode, talking about drugs and drug addiction. What's it mean for you and your career to be a part of this program?
Oh, it means a lot. You know, Judd Apatow is a guy that I didn't really know. I mean, he's so involved in comedy, and you don't realize how many things that he produces, and in almost a nameless, faceless way. And so you know people who have worked with him if you're in comedy in some way. And I've, you know, known a lot of people who've worked with him over the years, and I've heard nothing but good stuff about him off and on camera. And so when I got a chance to audition for this show, I wanted to because it was him, and I knew Pete Holmes' work, and I thought Pete was a real interesting stand-up and an interesting guy, and who always took risks, and I liked that. And you know, HBO's HBO, so I went in, and it turned into this amazing thing where I play myself. The audition was for a fictional character, and you know, Judd had read my book and was a fan of it, which I was flattered by. So a lot of the stories in the book became fodder for what they put in the show. And you know, they got to see firsthand. Anybody who meets me or works with me sees firsthand, you know, how I struggle with this on and off, and you know, the horrors of it, and how you get clean for a little while, and you try to make it permanent, and then when you fall off the wagon, it's a living hell. And I was never absent or anything like that. I was never late for the show, but I think they could see when I was good and when I was bad. Mm. And when I got good again, they said, you know, I think it would help a lot of people if we talked about that in a way that you was respectful of you. And I said, yeah, because, you know, look, I don't know if it's out of guilt or whatever. Whenever I get a chance to do something that's kind of charitable, I try to do it because, you know, I say it in the show. I want to put karma out there in case, you know, there is an afterlife or, you know, going up to St. Peter's, I have something to in the trial of whether or not I go to the good place or the bad one. I have something to point to where, hey, look, I was good. And also, it is something I know firsthand. If you can help somebody young, because it's got to happen young, is the best chance to help somebody. You know, prevention is what I think it is, and in an unbelievable way, a lot of young people say they look up to me, and I feel responsibility for that. Yeah. I can't believe you know how that happened, and so this was a no brainer, and I'm glad it came out so good. I appreciate the kind words.
Well, it is interesting, and then you look at your Twitter feed and the response that people have had to the program, and coming out and saying, hey, listen. I was addicted. I'm in recovery watching this. This is my story. I mean,
right.
You know, for you, obviously you said you wanted to do something to return, but you have fought this in such a public way. I mean, whether going all the way back to even the stories that are in your book, but even with Howard and even, you know, everything that every time you have something that you might fall off the wagon, it's on TMZ. It's, you know, it's front and center. It's front page news. How difficult is that for someone in recovery to have every step scrutinized, publicized, put in front of a lens?
Well, it sucks, quite frankly. I mean, you know, listen, if you're someone who has demons, and I've had them for a long time, you better watch what you get into, because if your goal is to be, you know, in a profession that might make you somewhat famous, you know, it was different 25 years ago, but of course it was still when I was trying to so-called make it, whatever that means. But stuff was not that out there. But with social media now, and like you say, stuff like TMZ, a place like TMZ is always good to me. But look, you know, you can't have it both ways. Either you get to the point where you're successful enough to where you're famous enough to where if something happens to you, it's news. Like there's that one aspect of where you go, well, you know, I guess I'm known enough to where people write about it, but at the same time, you know, what are people most interested in? And I know from being on the other side of the media myself, with Howard and everything else, you report on stuff that's negative usually, and that's what people want to hear about. So, but the thing is, as a man who you know, has some vices over the years. You you know, you like to keep things from people like your mother, your family. Some things, you know, is not for everybody's eyes. And you know, when something like that happens, everybody finds out about it. I become almost, and the people close to me become almost like anesthetized to it. You know, you don't, you just know that's going to be part of it. And there's going to be people out there who are nice and people out there who are just like evil about it. But at the same time, you know, I've learned to just let it roll off my back, because if I didn't, I'd go crazy.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's watching Crashing on Sunday, and there are a lot of points in the episode that are relatable, even to people who may not be in the struggle that you're in. But when you're talking about recovery or people who might be trapped by their demons, there's a great line where, you know, there's a question about, you know, you can't really force this on anybody. You have to be ready to be able to give it up, and maybe you're not ready to. I mean, how much of that is true to your life? How much of that, when we see the Artie Lang, the character, and Crashing up on stage, and the things that happen in the episode, how much of the lessons that are taught in that episode are true to the story of Artie Lang?
All of them, but almost every one of them. I mean, you know, I've never done something as blatantly bad as miss a benefit like that for a comic. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm known for the one good thing that I think I'm still known for is if there's something like that going on, I'm there and I help. I mean, that was hard to do because, that's more something that the character did. And if I did, miss something like that, I would never react the way I did with Pete outside that club. But yeah. At the same time, there are definitely people who do it. I don't judge them, because if you're in that hell, you know, you could do something that's something like an a-hole would do. You know, I mean, that's the only way I could describe how my character's acting at the end of that. It's really hard to watch. But I have missed other things, and you know, where fans of mine who I love pay for stuff, they get the money back, but that's not what it's about with them. It's about seeing me, and I really get to the point where I don't know what to do. I couldn't be more sorry about it, and I try to make it up. And you get into this endless barrage of doing something wrong, trying to make it up to people, and it becomes a roller coaster. But I when I started to get better here and there was when I said, you know, that's all got to stop. If they say it's got to be for you, but the thing that made me, you know, even seek help is the fact that other people were getting hurt, and I couldn't stand that. But at the same time, it's an ongoing problem because of the heroin. If I could say more with something to young people, it's like, that is the drug to avoid. If you're gonna get high, you know, you shouldn't on any level. But people have to avoid opiates at all costs. Like, a doctor is becoming a dealer nowadays, the way they prescribe Oxycontin. And, you know, if a kid's got a football injury, you got to make sure they desperately need that stuff, because if you give it to them in the casual way it's been given out, it's going to lead to an addiction that is lifelong. And opiates become a part of your body. Heroin's different because you need it eventually, like you need air, and every 8 hours you need it, or you can't function, and the withdrawals are hell, and you can't travel with it because it's illegal, and it leads to problems that are a myriad of things you can't even imagine. It's just so a lot of it was true, but you know, I'm not that much of a jerk, but you can be that way with heroin, you know.
You know, Artie, the whole experience of watching that, and it was uncomfortable, but at the same time, it was very mesmerizing, and it was thrilling to watch a character that you're playing yourself go through the things that we've read about you having to go through. How was it for you to act in those scenes? How was it for you as a recovering addict who has been off and on the wagon all year long to be in a position where you are playing someone who's on and off and on and off? I mean, talk about that experience, the surrealness of playing a character that has the same exact life experience as you do.
Well, you know, it's funny, if you're playing, you know, I've acted enough even in just comedies to where if you're playing someone who has some bad stuff going on. Like I played a murderer in a film once, and a guy who ends up being a killer and almost like a mystery thing years ago. And I remember saying to myself, "Well, God, I'm glad I'm not this guy." But it's fun to play it, you know. In something like this, you know, there's such crazy stuff that this person's doing, tragic stuff, and you realize. You know, in my head sometimes I lose myself and go, I'm glad I'm not this guy. Wait, I am this guy. I'm this guy down to the exact spelling of the name. That is sometimes, you know, I actually stopped a couple of takes, you know, making up an excuse like my microphone wasn't on right or something because, you know, emotionally I wasn't ready to go into what we were about to do because it was something that, to me was you know, like the scene where I'm sitting there and I'm telling him I'm in recovery smoking a cigarette on the couch, like right. that the blatant lying that I've had to do in my life and it's tough to do that because you realize how awful of a friend you're being and then you realize you've done this before. So you know, but Judd and Pete were very 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 respectful of that. And they made sure I was okay with everything, and that helped the script out immensely. But I wanted it to be as real as possible, so it's hard. It's not easy.
You got a big sentencing hearing coming up, and you've of course continued to balance who you are and the demons that are inside you with the fact that you're clean and you're sober. I mean, where are you at right now? What goes through your head? Obviously having to be in a moment where you are in the spotlight. I mean, you're talking to me tonight, but I mean, you look at your Twitter feed and you look at the expression that has been released on social media about what we saw on Sunday. Where are you at?
Yeah.
I mean, is this a good thing for you as someone in recovery that there's a lot around this?
But well, you know what? That's the great human experiment that is me. I've been, messing around with that thing for a long time. Where how much do you put out there? When I got on Howard, you know, obviously by that point I'd been to jail and everything, and there were stories that were crazy. And the fact that I could tell them in a funny way is something that helped me get the job. But you know, it wasn't the only reason I got the job. I hate blurring the line in between why I'm funny. It's not because I have these loser stories, it's because I'm funny. And it's important to me to let people know that when I got into show business, that none of this was out yet, and half of it hadn't happened. But I don't know, to tell you the truth. I mean, I like the fact that when I see that people say it helped them watch it, that's great. So it's worth it for that. And the fact that I love working with Judd and Pete so much, I think they're proud of it. It makes me proud. So it's hard for me to critique something, but I think right now it's a positive because as many people are out there that are haters, I really think my experience is there's way more people that are nice about it and feel for you and are rooting for you, and that's nice to see too. You know,
Artie Lang, of course, one of the stars of HBO's Crashing. The episode Artie aired on Sunday was brilliant. Really a real life look at, I guess, an artistic look at the real life of Artie Lang. It's great to talk to you again, and I appreciate you taking time out to talk about this sensitive subject, especially in your life. And we appreciate it. And we appreciate the fact that you put it into the show and were able to act it and play it and let us have a quick glimpse into the life of Artie Lang. So we appreciate you taking some time out tonight, Artie. Appreciate it.
Justin, listen, ever since going back to the gig last summer and with this stuff, you've been very nice to me. I appreciate the kind words. So thank you. I really appreciate it, man.
Coming up, we're going to play The Worst. Catherine Pavanelli and Sarah Albritton. They finally, hey, Pete, this is good. They got the Super Narcoleptic Girl, the web series, done. We're talking about that way back, about a year ago, I felt like. And they've been watching Sarah's Instagram. She's been jet-setting across New York, L.A., all over the place, film festivals and web series premieres, things like that. So they'll be our guests tonight as we play The Worst for pizza. 312-981-7200. You know the game. What's the worst? And if you get the best one, we'll give you pizza. That's the fun part. How great talking to Artie Lang. And, you know, I realize he's not doing a lot of media on that. And I think it's great that, I mean, I had a chance to interview him probably in the early part of the summer before he came through for Thalia Hall. First time I had ever talked to him and knew him in any form, and appreciated him being honest about his career, and, you know, thought I did an okay job. But I like that he has come back and trusts us enough to talk about these issues, because it's, I would assume it's pretty hard, man, to be talking about your heroin addiction, not only on HBO, but then having to do the subsequent media afterwards about what was it like to be on HBO? You know, that's got to be tough. And, you know, as a fan of Artie Lang and someone who has been a fan of Artie's for a long time, I have. I loved him on Howard, and I loved him on Mad TV, and I've known of his work. It's good to see him get to a point where he recognizes the demons that he may not be able to fix it, and he may not be in a position where he can control it, obviously, but at least he recognizes he's not doing the same cycle over and over and over, where he pretends he doesn't have a problem, and then he ends up with a big. That's what ended up, you know, killing his career on Howard, was just the idea that they didn't even know, and then it happened, and it was just a anyway. So great to have Artie on, and good luck to him in the future.
It's going down, y'all.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN 312-981-7200. It is time to play the worst. Man, Pete, it has been like, I feel like a month and a half with Blackhawks and different things. We haven't actually had a chance to play the worst, but we're ready to play now. 312-981-7200. This, of course, our Tuesday night segment where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. And we've got prizes tonight. We've got a Lou Malnati's pizza. We've got a desktop indoor weather station. What else could you want on a night like this? 312-981-7200. And we have in studio a panel tonight. Some regulars are back. Sarah Albritton. Sarah, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And, of course, this is second time through for Catherine Pavanelli. Good to see you.
Hiya, good to see you, too.
And you guys are the co-creators of Super Narcoleptic Girl, which is the web series Pete and I were just talking about in the last hour, that the last time you were here, you were talking about this project and you were going to do this, and it's amazing that it is complete. It is up right now. Mm-hmm. Talk about it before we start. Obviously comes from your life experience, Sarah, as being narcoleptic. We've talked about this before on the show.
A little bit, but the idea actually came across while we were drinking, as many good ideas come. This is true. Margaritas were involved in the process.
It's a web series that follows a superhero whose power, she has a couple of powers, but
she makes people dance, and she also happens to have narcolepsy. So it does stem from some of my real experiences as a narcoleptic, but in a comedic way.
And where can we find it?
YouTube
and Facebook.
And Facebook, you can go to sngwebseries.com, and we have all the links to that.
All right.
And at facebook.com/sngwebseries, follow us. It's just at sngwebseries for everything. So
yep. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook,
all that stuff.
All of it.
Yep.
Well, and you guys just told me the story that you're both going to be leaving Chicago soon.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are the allure, the lights of Hollywood beckoning, right?
More the sun allure.
Yeah. Same thing, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, we got you here before you guys move, so I'm glad that you're here. 312-981-7200. Let's play the worst. Very excited. We'll kick it off the way we do every night with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, take it away.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
The underscore.
It's like, what is...
What's the, I hate what when you have that? To tweet something with an underscore. Oh, my gosh. It's the worst.
I found that a lot of celebrities like the underscore when it comes to Twitter. Because I'll send out tweets at the beginning of the show where I say, this person's on. And I'll put someone's name in, and I'll be like, that's not who that is. And I'll be like, oh, I'll bet there's an underscore. And I do the underscore, and it's like, official page. Yeah, so nobody likes the underscore.
Mm-mm.
When's the last time you used an underscore?
Ooh. It's been a... I don't know. It's been
probably
a while.
In a tweet at some point recently.
Right? Twitter's the only thing keeping the underscore around.
Yeah, probably.
And relevant.
Yep.
Yeah, don't get me started on the double hyphen. Oh. We'll get into it. We want to get into it. We'll get into it. There's a lot of keys that need to be replaced. Really? How is it that we have all of this technology that's improving our world, yet the keyboard stays the same? We don't change any of these features and the little symbols that are not used at all.
Explain to me F7.
Exactly, right? Look at this.
Or like the little left carrot or the right carrot. Who uses
those? Who uses that? Or the brackets, the italicized brackets.
Well, you used to make like the little things like in the 90s. You'd make the little, people would make the things that like took forever to make like a heart something.
Right. Now we don't need that, right? Our iPhones do it for us.
At work, I would just hit this end button continuously and hope the day would end. I feel like that's what I would do looking at this keyboard.
So, all right, so that stays. We'll keep the end
button. We'll keep the end button.
But there's a lot of other symbols that are on the table. All right, Sarah, what do you got for the worst this week?
Oh, the worst. Oh, gosh, I didn't even think about it. I think it's the worst when you're trying to get somewhere and the train stops midway. And that was on the way here.
That happened to you guys?
Yes. Oh, my God. It just stopped for no apparent reason.
And then it decides to go express, and every single person gets off the train because nobody wants to go all the way to...
It went express to Roosevelt. I'm like, who's going there? No one.
Nobody. I will say it's I mean, it's a rite of passage for Chicagoans to have the L story where it dies underground and you have to be at least you didn't have to climb up out of anywhere. Yeah. Right? That's the grossest. When people say, we had to get out when you're down in the tunnel.
Ew.
That's pretty gross. That happens in New York a lot.
I've never had to do that and I hope I don't.
Yeah.
Mole
right?
people.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's mole people. That's creepy.
When I remember one time it happened to me, I can date myself. I'll never forget this. It was the 98 NBA Finals.
Ooh. Oh.
So when the 98 NBA Finals, I was in Chicago, and I was a young kid, and you know, of drinking age, but was going downtown or coming back downtown after they won, and it stalled out. And so it was a sweat, because it was June, July, or whenever that ended. And it was one of those, like, sweaty days, and it was sweaty down there, and there's just a bunch of people who wanted to party because the Bulls were on, and it was just maybe it was just about over. It was over, so they were ready, but they were also tempered by the fact that they were stuck in a red line car. So they're like, yeah, like that was the energy of the whole place. Like, yeah, that was my experience. All right, Kathy, what do you got for the worst?
Ooh, baby showers without alcoholic beverages.
Oh, yes. That's definitely the worst.
That is the worst. I don't care if you're pregnant. Give me a mimosa.
Yeah. Do people do that?
They do. I was tricked.
Why do they do that? They base it on their own? Like, if they don't drink, they're like, why would I have booze? Or is it a cheap thing?
I think this one particular one, it was... I think she was a party girl, but she obviously had been reformed as a new mother, but decided not to have any alcohol there and neglected to inform me. And I was like, I am never giving you a book for your child ever again.
I think that...
Is that your go-to, a book? You go
well, no, because there's that trend now where it's like, instead of bringing cards, bring a book and write a message. My message would be, give me alcohol.
Yes.
Baby.
I think that, like, children's parties, they should always have alcohol, like, because they're really for the adults at that point, because they can't get out, like, they're stuck with this thing. I mean, it's a baby, but
this thing.
I'm not friends with that person.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I got you're stuck with this thing.
Sorry, you're a dad, aren't you?
But I totally understand where you're coming from. Sarah Albert and Catherine Bobinelli in studio tonight. Super narcoleptic girl is online everywhere now. The web series, check it out. We'll take a quick break. 312-981-7200. We'll come back and we will start with your worsts. We're playing for pizza tonight. Stay with us.
What's going down, y'all?
The show is called WGN TV News at 9, but you can find all that stuff out at WGNTV.com. So it kind of throws you off with the 9. Mm-hmm. It kind of shows my age a little bit because I'm like, oh, it's after 9. I didn't see it. I must have missed it. When you can see all that stuff online and it doesn't really matter when it airs. Catherine Pavanelli and Sarah Albritton in studio. They are the co-creators of Super Narcoleptic Girl, which is a web series which is out now. They just got back from L.A., New York, just all over the place, and great Instagram and Facebook posts of you guys killing comedy everywhere you go. Just did a show here at The Annoyance as well. Congratulations on all your success, and you will be certainly missed when you guys move to the West Coast.
Aw, thank you. That's sweet.
All right, let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Are you guys ready? Ready? 773 says, you know what's the worst? Babysitting for a kid 6 years old, and he locks himself in the bathroom while taking a bath. Ouch. Oh, that's tough.
That's actually scary.
Yeah. There's nothing. I had that happen with a dog once. They weren't taking a bath, but it was like the door locked, and I was like, yeah, man, there's a dog on the other side of that door.
See, this is why I think like everyone should take like a lock picking class, so that way you know how to get in there. Yeah. I have never taken a lock picking class.
Sleep with someone who knows how to pick locks.
Oh, that's better. Instead of learning the skill, just make sure you sleep with the person that knows how to do that.
Yeah, I've done that before. I've purposely slept with people
you
just for skill
sets. You pick locks? Really? That's hilarious. Okay. And 312, I'd say that those people are probably not around, right? If you're sleeping with people for skills, that you've moved on, I'm guessing.
What do you mean?
No? No. 312, the worst is when you work in retail and you have the system that you use. It decides to freeze and you have a line of five people giving you dirty looks. Once the system unfreezes, it's just super slow. Mm. That sounds like something that's like happening as we speak. That's like a real-time worst.
Oof.
Yeah. They're like at the Old Navy right now being like, dealing with me.
Yeah,
you shop at Old Navy.
Someone's like, I need my flannel. I need my fleece. Yeah. That's what it is.
My 10-year-old son calls me Larry David because my wife called me Larry David, and he picked up on it because I get so Larry David when I get in the Old Navy and the Gap and other places, and they are doing the little switcheroo where it's like it's this. It no, not everything on that rack is $14.99. I know it says that, but it's the rack is $14.99. The clothes are $27, and I'm like, I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna lose it. And I do the whole thing. I'm not buying it. I'm giving it back. I make a whole scene to these poor people who work at the Gap who are like, really, dude?
And then is your head that little theme song?
Yeah. And my son is rolling his eyes at me, and I'm like, ugh. Do what has to be done.
Oh, that's how you know you have a tween, right? They start the eye roll.
Yeah, they start the eye roll. All right, we keep going here. 708 says, you know what's the worst? Worcestershire.
Disagree. I love Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire.
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 Worcestershire. All right, let's see. Okay. Mary's got a good one. She says, going to DMV for my license renewal. Oof. And my new picture will show a double chin that I don't actually have, but they make you tilt your head down for the picture.
What?
Unfortunately, they don't let you take selfie stick versions at the DMV.
I try to do, whenever I, in that situation, I try to do bits. Mm-hmm. You try to do bits with the person who's behind the camera. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, hey, let's change it up so it doesn't seem like we all hate each other.
I feel like the DMV people would have a lot more fun with their day. Like, because we're stuck there.
Right.
So why are they not messing with us more?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like now you're not allowed to smile. Like, you're supposed to show, like...
Yeah, right. What do you do?
It's like, I don't know.
What are you going for? What's your look on a...
Serial killer.
I go with biggest smile possible. Like, I'm having so much fun. So then when you're pulled over or any point, they're like, or if someone has to look at the driver's license, they're like, this guy's okay.
They're going to look at me and go, serial killer.
Look, they look at you and go, oh, this person's up to no good. With me, they're like, this guy sees the joy in life.
Yeah.
Right?
let's arrest him.
I just try to keep my eyes open in the picture.
Right?
847, this is probably a problem we all have. The worst is when a skunk gets into the walls or ceilings of your home and then dies.
Oh.
That is the worst.
How did you... Yeah, that's a lot to figure out to come to that conclusion.
For having a home.
Yeah. You own a home.
You own a home. Let the skunk visit.
It's probably
that's
gotta
just cold.
Tough,
though. That's got to be tough. One time, I'll remember this forever, that I was in an office... we had up on the north side, and we thought that a rodent had climbed into the walls and died because the smell was just real skanky, right? It's getting real skanky. And we kept smelling the walls and trying to figure it out, and we came this close to actually like pounding, like opening. We were renting the space, so we're like, well, do we call them? What's the deal? And then we were reminded that someone looked in the mini fridge. Kate, one of our members of Schadenfreude, she had brought back from her trip like maybe a month before, like fresh Canadian whitefish. She was in Canada.
Ew.
And she brought it for everyone, like, hey, do you guys want it? And we're like, yeah, it sounds good. Put it in the fridge for now. We forgot about it. And they're like, so like, yeah, ew, exactly.
That's
and like
so
for
gross.
3 days, we're like, I think we need to get a sledgehammer. I think it might be a possum. Like there was that. We were convinced it was a possum. So to this person, I would say maybe check the mini fridge.
Yeah, check the mini fridge.
Always check the mini fridge.
He has a house, but just a mini fridge.
Yeah,
man.
You know, style. 331 says, when you bite your tongue and it becomes so swollen that you constantly bite it again and again.
Oh, What? That's a weird complaint.
Right.
I'm like, I bite my tongue and then I just...
I hate biting tongue. That's the worst.
Or burning your tongue on like a pizza, like a hot pizza. You're like excited to eat it, and then you're like, "Oh, I can't taste anything now."
Yep. You got a 2 day. You got a 2 day
you
burn.
Get that weird sandpaper feeling, like a cat.
773's got a great one. The worst is when you're playing Uno with kindergartners, and one of them reversed. But the catch is that they don't understand what a reversal does. So for the following 45 minutes, you're telling him it's not his turn yet.
Aww. That was so sweet.
That's one of my, that's a front runner right there. That's really hilarious. Cute. That's like a sketch.
I think the worst is just playing any kind of game like that with children. That's
Could you imagine? It's got to be tough to play Uno because Uno is a very complicated game.
I was going to say, this
strategy and
kindergartner
that kind of stuff.
Knows how to count. Good for him.
Yeah, right?
Or her.
Or her. But I mean, yeah, that's a tough game to, now it's a lose a turn. So now what you're going to do is you're going to look for a different color. Do you got a different color 9? You got a different color 9? You got a different color 9?
I just feel like that would be like a 5-hour game.
I'm impressed that you remember how to play Uno.
I love Uno.
Oh, man. I haven't played Uno in a long time.
I bet if we made it a drinking game, I could get you to play.
I would play Uno. That's all Sarah has to say.
Yeah. All right. We got some good stuff to start here. 312-981-7200. They're still coming in. We'll do the second half coming up here. Sarah Albritton and Catherine Pavanelli are my guests. They are the co-creators of Super Narcoleptic Girl. It's a web series which you can find everywhere, YouTube, Facebook, and all the social media channels. The ones that are influencers.
Yeah. Right?
The secondary stuff, the underground stuff, you guys skip that.
Yeah.
I was trying to make some joke about that old musical website, and I can't even remember what
MySpace?
It's called. MySpace? I was like, we're not on MySpace.
No, we're not on MySpace.
Old, that's so
we're
old.
Also not it on is. Friendster.
Friendster's a good one.
Is Friendster still a thing?
I don't think so. I think MySpace is still a thing.
What else was old? LiveJournal? That was a thing.
LiveJournal? I'm more of an Earth, like a GeoCities guy.
My Juno email account?
All right, we'll take a break. We'll get an update. Rob Mark here. We'll come back on The Worst. Stay with us. All right, Rob, what do you got for The Worst?
Potholes, my friend. Potholes.
Don't tell me you hit one, did you?
No. But our good friends over at ABC, I saw a tweet earlier this morning from Diane Pathew, I think. She's one of their reporters over there. She was in the storm tracker vehicle, whatever they call it. Blew out a tire.
You know, that's going to be I'll bet you that'll be a big story coming up here because the snow and the rain and all this kind of stuff. We haven't had snow for a while, but the snow is what breaks down a lot of that concrete. So.
Well, you get the freeze and the thaw and the expansion.
The freeze and the thaw, the 60 and the 30.
Hey, let's diagram a pothole.
It's going down, y'all. The worst, my peoples come first.
All right, it's time for the second half of The Worst, 312-981-7200. Sarah Albritton and Catherine Pavanelli in studio. They are the co-creators of Super Narcoleptic Girl, the web series which was just released. And do you guys have plans? I mean, you have plans for another show because you had shows in Chicago, New York, and L.A. in the last three weeks. Do you guys going to go on any more tours?
Go for it, Sarah.
I mean, I think we'd love to do more cities and that sort of thing. We might have another series viewing, at least another one in Chicago before I leave, I know.
Right, there's definitely going to be another one in Chicago. I think the date is TBD still. Okay. And we'll probably do a couple in Los Angeles once we're both out there.
Yeah, we would love to do more shows where we screen the whole thing and, you know, maybe have some awesome stand-ups like we have in the others.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Greg Holloman's in the Super Narcoleptic Girl. Greg Holloman, one of my faves. He's been on the show, but he also is well known as Principal Blackman from Strangers with Candy.
Yeah. And he's also in Shrink, which is now on NBC's website, I believe.
Tim Baltz show, yeah.
He was so much fun to
Hi,
work
Greg.
With.
He's great. He's a wonderful guy.
And he went with our ridiculous ideas and was like, no question about it. He's fine with it. He's like, yep, I'll play a big bumblebee.
Actually, my favorite part was when he came, he had his own costume. And then he saw what we actually were putting him in. And he was like, what? Pavanelli, you didn't tell me I was going to be wearing this entire outfit. And I was like, aren't you excited?
he was so funny. It was really hard to not laugh in that scene.
he's a fun guy and a funny guy. And he is in Super Narcoleptic Girl, the web series, which
and that's
is now on.
Episode 3 that he's in.
The Amazing Sting.
Mm-hmm.
There you
he
go.
Was actually
great.
There when we came up with the idea. When...
Yes, Greg Holloman was there at the, what is it, Inception? Conception? Yeah.
Conception, yeah.
Conception.
Yeah.
consented
inception.
Conception.
Inception would be good too, because that's an idea. I think conception might be a birth or a.
So he technically is one of the original three concept creators.
All right, there you go.
Yes.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get right back into the worst. 773 says the worst is opening up a cereal box upside down. But why would.
But
yeah.
Does it matter though? Like.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter.
Because the bag is still the same, right?
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've eaten cereal.
So. Well, I guess if you wanted to read it, like if you were talking about doing the crossword puzzles or whatever that are on the bag, where Toucan Sam goes.
But as an adult, you should be able to do that upside down
anyways.
No one
can see my face. My face is pure perplexion right now. I'm just like, how do you do that?
Well, maybe it's someone who really wants to work the box, and maybe they're 10 and they're listening. I don't know. 251 says the worst is leaving for 3 days then coming home to be homeless and jobless in a 24-hour period.
That's really terrible.
Terrible.
This is when we get to the point of the worst where you have a couple of different styles. You got people who are doing it for fun. They're like, there's also irritants and things that happen to them. And then there's literally the worst. That's going to be your illnesses or big job life events that change. This falls into
that category. I was going to say that's pretty terrible.
That is terrible. Sorry to hear that. 773 lightens it back up. Hospital gowns.
Why? Yeah, like they
I kind of love those. I'm not gonna lie.
Of course,
I get so confused. I it takes me a little bit of time to figure out what I'm doing with it.
It feels like you're just wearing like
it's in the front.
Yeah, that's what throws you off because you automatically go to the back. Then you're like, this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it's just like wearing like uncomfortable tissue paper. It's just like nothing. I don't know.
Mine was cloth.
Cloth.
Yeah, with the cloth ones, I just have a problem with which way goes. And I'm always like, I'm going to do it wrong. And then the nurse is going to walk in and be like, what are you doing? Are you a functioning member of society? I'm not.
They should just have like a diagram on the wall. They have diagrams on the wall for everything in hospitals. Why don't they have one for the thing?
Right.
There's a choking thing. Is there food in the is there food in this room right now? No. Why is there a choking thing? You know, that makes no sense.
All right, 773 says, threading. Went to a salon and had an eyebrow threaded. It was so painful, I did not want the other one done. The salon owner waxed the other so I would not have uneven results.
I've never done the threading. Have you done the threading?
Not on my eyebrows.
I don't know.
On other sections.
I don't even know what that means. But that's okay. We'll keep going. Mary, 847, says the worst is when you're at the gas pump, the temperature's below freezing, and you need to use that disgusting public squeegee because your windshield is totally ice. And the squeegee handle is stuck in there like a popsicle smeared with salt residue.
Ew.
But the bucket of fluid is it's a chunk and a stick, and it's funny. That's pretty good, Mary. That's very descriptive.
That is.
You got everybody.
I've painted the picture in my brain.
I can visualize that fully.
Yeah. Mm. 773 says, hitting the send button and realizing you sent your message to the wrong person who was the subject of the email.
Ooh,
I've done that.
Yeah, that's bad. Or like the reply all, or like sending a group message when you meant to send to one.
Right.
This sounds like it's personal. Like they were like, I am so sick of Dan. Send. Oh my God, I sent it to Dan.
Dan, I was just joking.
Oh, Dan, what happened?
Sorry, I was venting.
224 gives us the worst is when you get Snapchat notifications saying your friend is typing, so then you go to Snapchat and wait for them to post something, then minutes later, he doesn't post anything, so then you go back to doing what you were doing. As soon as you do, he does post something.
What? I guess just...
I'm not a Snapchat user, so the idea is that they get a notification when they're about to post.
So someone's like typing, like if the dot dot dot, if I was like texting you and you're getting the dot dot dot, it's like Sarah's about to message you something, but then I don't. It's a Snapchat tease. It's like it's a texting tease.
It's the hanging little S or something that you accidentally typed into the subject and then the thing thinks you're getting a text, but you're not really.
Yeah. I've kind of moved from Snapchat to the Instagram for sure.
To the gram. Yeah. 815 says the worst is when you hear a snap and you realize your underwire broke.
Ah. Oh, in the bra?
I'm assuming.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah,
that at least it wasn't their hip. That's what I was thinking initially.
Yeah. Like, oh, at least it's okay. Not like a
it's not body. A vital body part.
No, this would be, I would think, the underwiring of a bra.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear like snap and I think, oh God, what bone?
Yeah, what bone?
like that's terrifying.
The bone of my bra.
773 says getting a flat tire on the expressway in the pouring rain today, only to find your spare just as flat as your tire, your change.
That's rough.
Oh, that's a tough one. That's not fun. That's not good. No. That goes into, yeah, that's the worst, right?
Yeah.
708 says having to change a tire in the cold when it's snowing. Yeah, that's
Yep.
All things with tires.
Yeah, 847, this is car related. The worst is when your dog locks you out of the car while it's raining. Or while it's running. Sorry, I had the cursor.
What kind of dog do you have?
And, well, and I can see dog, if it's an
the
old
dog's pretty
car.
Cool.
If it's an old car, right? A dog jumps up on the window and hits the little button, it would lock the doors on everything, right?
How old is this car?
Yeah, maybe it's an old car. They didn't say the name of the make.
Yeah,
and model.
I mean, well, my dog used to be able to.
78 have Chrysler. I don't know.
Dogs have opposable thumbs now. Just clicking the.
Just pause. They're so excited. All there is a window, and they want to get to the owner, and they don't realize that they just automatically locked the entire car.
Oh, my owner's never going to come to me now.
I know that would be that would be tough.
Okay, well, let's see. They get mad at me when you're at the DMV and you're getting your picture taken and you do this and they say, this is radio, no one understands what you're saying. That's me. Okay, sounds good. 312 says, jam on my client's papers that I took home to work on while eating a PB&J. Very unprofessional, but I licked it off.
Oh. I kind of love that answer.
309's got
that's
my
real.
Vote.
That's a real
309's
answer.
Got my vote. You ready for this one?
All right. Okay.
You know what's the worst? Sweaty dollar bills.
Ew.
That's a good one. That's a strong one, right?
That is a strong one because you
good.
Really want to touch it, but it's gross.
You're just like, ugh. Ugh. There's some good stuff. All right, 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take our last break here. We'll come back, and we will have some nominations for tonight's winners here on The Download. We're playing The Worst. Stay with us. All right, playing The Worst here, 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN. Sarah Alberton and Catherine Pavanelli in studio. Check out their web series, Super Narcoleptic Girl, which is out everywhere now. All right, we'll wrap up. We got our nominations, but there's still a lot coming in. So let's get right to it. We'll get right through. Peggy 219 says, the worst is when you're about to crush that last piece of candy and your battery dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. 518, you know what's the worst? Fat toes.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that means other people's fat toes, their own fat toes. I don't know.
Maybe they just have nightmares being attacked by fat toes.
Maybe it's like, yeah, maybe it's, yeah. 708, the worst is people come into the restaurant 2 minutes before the kitchen closes and order full meals.
Oh,
that is awful.
That is terrible. That is awful.
773 says the worst is when your cat gets stuck behind the fridge and you've got two herniated discs. Oof.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Eee.
773 says took the car to the auto shop, went to pick it up. They lost the car key.
Ooh.
Had no spare.
Ugh.
Oof.
These are rough.
Yeah. These are rough,
these
right?
These are rough.
That's scaring me right now because I don't have a spare and they have my only key right now.
Uh-oh. You could be in trouble.
No, I would make them. I'd be like, hey, no, you're a car repair place. You can make me a key. Call your locksmith person.
Call a locksmith.
312, this is a pretty good one. When you're caught by a coworker with your hand up a vending machine's crack, I guess that's what they say, trying to pull something out. I told him, you tell anybody about this and I swear I'll pull your appendix out.
What?
What is that?
I would call HR on that guy.
John, thanks for being here. This is really about the vending machine threat. We wanted to give you a yellow ticket for that. You just can't threaten people over vending machines. No, it's a different time. It's 2018.
Yeah.
773, this is my favorite. When you make prolonged eye contact with a stranger and you give them a head nod, but they just continue to stare.
That's so creepy.
That's so creepy.
708, box flaps on the bottom end won't interlock and close like the ones on the top. They're talking about the cereal box.
There's, darn it. Lots of issues with boxes tonight.
I see, but whatever.
Oh, the worst. Sending a tray of homemade brownies to my daughter's office, then making up a batch for the family, but finding out that the flour was buggy. So stopping before I made them and then threw it out. Too late to notify the office group. Oh. I felt guilty when I got a thank you for the delicious treats.
Ew.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
Stick it to the man, Mom.
Oh, that is the worst. It could have been worse, though.
Well, it'd be worse if it was like, if you're serving people that are like vegetarian, but there's like secretly meat in something.
Yeah,
it's supposed
right,
to be
right,
like not
right.
meat.
Do bugs count as meat?
Yeah. Maybe. So I've eaten the grasshopper.
I've heard like there's a thing with like crickets now, like because they're full
crickets,
of protein,
yeah,
like right. that they're in. People like to eat crickets or make things out of crickets. I don't know.
773 says the worst is when you get an even dollar amount at the gas pump, but you go over by a penny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
815, the worst is when you go into your kitchen and you see a squished spider on the floor and you realize you're the only one that stepped on it and you're barefoot.
Oh, I'd be checking my foot, make sure it didn't bite you, like while you were killing it, like the last, like, hey, you're gonna kill me, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna.
I love spiders.
312 says the worst PTSD, public trough stress disorder, can't do it, even urinals, too much pressure, and the silence tells me you guys have not been in a male bathroom. At Wrigley Field.
No.
You know what, they kick
at Wrigley
me out
Field,
every time.
Yeah, they have, you know, horse troughs. They have troughs that are like these long hall. Almost the entire length of the bathroom is just a silver or gray trough all the way down. And men just saddle up, I mean, thigh to thigh, touching.
Ew.
To pee.
So they're like encouraging the men to act like animals anyways. Like
yeah, I'm with the PTSD on that. That is a hard place to pee. I'm not going to lie to you. When you get in there and there's a lot of pressure because someone stands right behind you because
what?
They want to go.
Is somebody like...
Yeah, it's
is
crazy.
Is like a waterfall? Are you worried that somebody else's pee is going to
get
on you?
No. You get up there, but there's so many people that want... To, that's why they have it set up that way.
But you're saying there can be some flow issues.
There's no flow issues. That's not the issue. The issue is that someone is waiting right behind you, standing right behind you while you're thigh to thigh with other guys. And there's an efficiency to this. You have to go fast. You have to get done because the idea is that it's almost like a turnstile.
Yeah,
so.
that sounds pretty terrible.
Yeah. That's
all right, that's going to do it tonight. That is pretty terrible. That is. All right, so we got the top three. We're playing for a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 16-Minute Men, and also a Lou Malnati's gift certificate, two of them. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoan locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right, getting the weather station tonight, 773. The worst is when you're playing Uno with kindergartners,
yes.
And one of them reversed, but
yes.
The catch is that they don't understand what reversal does, so the following 45 minutes is you telling him it's not his turn yet.
Yep. That's great.
All right, for the pizzas tonight, 773. When you make prolonged eye contact with a stranger and give him a head nod, but they just continue to stare.
Creeper.
Creeper. And 309 is going to take away a pizza as well. First place tonight, the worst. Sweaty dollar bills.
Ew,
oh,
yes.
So gross. Sarah Albritton and Catherine Pavanelli, they are the co-creators of Super Narcoleptic Girl web series that you can find in all different platforms.
SNGwebseries.com or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SNGwebseries.
There you go. You guys, great to see you. And I hope to see you before you leave for California.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for having us.
All right, that's going to do it for the show tonight. Patty Vasquez with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez coming up next. Hi, Patty. How are you?
How are you doing? I loved your guest for It's the Worst.
What's the worst?
It's the worst.
It's the worst.
The worst. Yes, they were great.
I love that segment. I'm always like, yeah, that is bad. There's I'm not sure about stuff. Fat toes. I'm not sure where that was coming
from. I know,
from.
And there's a was lot it? That we didn't get to tonight, too, as well. There's always stuff that comes in, and like I said, there's three different categories. There's the people who are being funny. There are people that, yes, that's an irritant. And then there is the real deal.
Seriously.
You are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. That is the worst.
That is
we got a couple of those.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we have some TV trivia coming up with John Tatey, awesome. And so we are going to give away an Apt Electronics gift card with that.
Oh, yeah.
I liked your weather station. I need to find out. By the way, who's giving away the Tribune truck? Did you see that sign in the window?
I didn't see it, no.
They apparently were giving away a truck. I don't know, not you or me. I'm guessing it's probably.
I don't know about it. The sign faces outward.
Yeah, you don't get to see. Bye, you guys. We also have we have an author coming on to talk about mindfulness and focus. So light your candles.
All right,
and
good.
Start to meditate
yes,
a little bit.
I all need right. mindfulness and focus.
Right, all those good. Things.
Yep, all of it. All right.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here with your news is Rob Martier.
Thank you, Rob. Justin Kaufman back for just a second here as we figure out some technical difficulties as we get ready for Patty's show. Yeah, I know. I'm just glad I'm down here still. I was.
Is it the rain? Did something leak into
something?
It
probably has something to do with the rain. If it wasn't raining, you know me, Rob. I'd be out the door.
Amen. Millie Vanilli said it best. Blame it on the rain, baby.
Blame it on the rain. You know, I forgot to mention this in the show tonight, and I'll talk a little bit more about it on Thursday while we get ready for Patty here. I decided, I don't know if I told you guys this, but I decided to take up the trip that was being offered to me, and I'm going to go to Jamaica on
nice.
Friday for a quick jaunt.
Wow.
Yeah. Because just to reset it, I was concerned. My parents are down there, and they were going with another couple, and everything was paid for. It's like an all-inclusive kind of thing. And the other couple bailed because, I think someone got sick. And so everything was paid for. And so my mom called me from Jamaica and said, yo, if you want to come down here, you can. And I was like, and it was like right when I was getting my furnace fixed. And I was like, no, I can't do that. No. It was like a super amount of stress. And then I thought about it over the weekend. I'm like, well, when am I ever going to get a chance to go to? It was actually a travel agent who had texted into the show who said, I went down there for one day. It's worth it to be able to see a part of the world that you haven't seen before and you may never see again. So I'm going to do it. So, yeah.
Can you bring me back a sombrero?
I will bring you back a sombrero.
Can you get those there?
Yeah. I think so. We'll see. All right. I think Patty's ready. I think Patty Vasquez is ready with the show. So whenever you're ready, take it away. Patty.
They were back. Some technical difficulty. Again, right. The rain is getting into all the equipment.
I'm going to blame it on the pending move.
Yeah. And just for everybody out there, what happens is when we switch studios, it's usually obviously seamless. It happens every night. But in this case, because of some technical difficulty, the switching is not working. So when we switch over to Patty's show, it's muted. In some form. So we're working that out. So we'll just kind of pay attention and keep you company until that case. But yes, Rob, I'm going to Jamaica. So it's going to be quick. And I'm going to go in. I think I'm going to leave Friday because the Blackhawks play Friday.
Right. Well, remind me again, is Mrs. Justin going with you or
no,
are you flying solo?
I'm going solo on this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this, well, you know, this is now, she's got that card now.
I thought about that. First I said, well, you want to go? That was the first thing. Do you want to go? And then she was like, no. And I was like, oh, well, can I go? You know, that kind of thing. And then she goes, yeah, you can go. And I was like, okay. And then it took me 2 days of going, are you sure? Really?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, she was cool with it. So it's not like I'm going with a bunch of frat house buddies. Babe, it's just a weekend in Jamaica, babe, with my buddies from college. It's not that. I'm going.
Don't worry. Only a couple of beers. Yeah. It's okay.
It's
just
okay,
a couple.
Babe. No, and it helps that the trip has been offered to us before, like as a go-to kind of thing, that my parents go to the same place. And my wife doesn't necessarily like what she sees in the pictures. Like it's one of those. Like my mom and my wife don't necessarily see eye to eye when it comes to the amenities.
Right.
My wife, she's a little bit more high-end, right? She's going to like the more sanitized version. Where my mom is like, I like it rustic. So there's no doubt that that plays a big factor. Where my wife's like, I'm okay, you can go, and I'm like, I'll go. I don't care. I'll sleep on the beach. It's all good by me. Just give me a conch. You know, as a pillow, and we're good to go.
Those sheets clean?
All right. I don't care.
Bring my own.
Bring my own. I mean, it's going to be... I just have a bad... The only thing I'm kind of laughing at is customs, because I'm going to walk through there on Friday with... I'm not going to pack a suitcase. I'm going to have a pair of shorts and maybe a collared shirt, and that's it. Right? And that's going to do it. So I will see at that point. I will be like, well, it'll be funny to watch how they react. All right, we're going to do this. We'll take a quick break here, and then we will come back, and hopefully it'll be time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. So stay with us here on 720 WGN.